about.
Testing 1, 2. Test. All right.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
V.I.G.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey, Farva, what's the name of that restaurant you like with all the goofy shit on the walls and the mozzarella sticks?
You mean shenanigans?
No!
You're talking about shenanigans, right?
Oh, no, wait, I got something brand new to play for you. Huh. Are you ready? Can you handle this? This is brand new. Anyway, here it is, exclusive on Rodney on the Rock.
And now.
This is how we do it.
This is how we do it.
Sha-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Our feature presentation.
That guy identifies himself as part of the Kevin and Bean Show. Beer mug.
Yeah.
Actually goes out. Sings and does stuff like that, and then goes, I work with those guys.
Yeah.
That's right.
And it's continuing. Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It is Thursday. It's the 2nd of April, and it is 5:34.
Indeed it is. Thursday morning. Anyone do anything fun last night?
Watched a documentary. Watched Jim Rome's new show, season premiere.
Oh, what's Showtime. Jim Rome's new show?
Well, it's his regular show.
Showtime
but,
show.
Yeah. His season premiere. This
Just came out. Okay, yeah. Gotcha. What's Jim talking about?
Well,
in very short sentences.
Yeah, he had Jim Rome. He had Rob Gronkowski twerking.
Well,
that was worth staying up for.
Sure. Does that worry you that could be an off-season injury if he's not careful?
Funny you should say that. He actually was talking about being in the party bus, and he'll dance in the party bus, and sometimes they'll go around a corner, and he won't anticipate it, and he'll fly into a wall or a lady.
Sweet.
What? He's so weird.
I need to party with that guy,
I believe.
Yeah,
you too.
So he's the East Coast party bus king, and Kevin's the West Coast.
Yes.
I like it. How about you, Monkey? Anything fun?
No. You know, hanging out, watching stuff. Watched the documentary on the police. Having Andy Summers in today. It was fascinating.
Seemed to be very popular.
Yeah, weird. We all watched that.
Strange, right?
Well, I got a story to get us started here. There was a lot of April Fool's nonsense around the world yesterday and certainly on the internet. But this is one that I thought was a little bit unusual. This is a car dealership in New Zealand, which, by the way, real place, New Zealand, you guys think?
I think so.
Okay. I'm not sure.
New Zealand. Yeah. It is a country.
Oh.
Yes,
country.
It is.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Murray. Okay. So it's in New Zealand, and this BMW dealership puts an ad on the front page of the New Zealand Herald. And it basically says, the first person who comes into the dealership today, April Fool's Day special, it says at the top. First person who stops by the BMW dealership day at this location today and asks for Tom will receive a free brand new BMW.
A new car!
Right. So it's April Fool's Day, so any right-thinking New Zealander would look at that and go, ha-ha, New Zealander. That's funny. April Fool's, yeah, right. Well, somebody did it, and it wasn't an April Fool's joke. It was for reals. Her name is Tiana Marsh, and she showed up at the car dealership, and she did as the ad suggested, and she asked for Tom, and they led her to Tom, and he said, well, if you brought in a car to trade in, the deal was, you know, you trade in your car for this brand new $50,000 BMW 1, and here it is.
Wow.
and it was a real thing, and they had a hidden camera going. Here's a little bit of the tape of her finding out. Well, I just lost the tape. How about that? A little bit of the tape of her finding out that that it was, in fact, real. Wow, I can't believe I lost my tape. Here it is. So sorry.
Good morning.
Are you Tom?
I am Tom. And you are?
Amy.
Amy and?
Tiana.
Tiana. How are we?
I found this in the Herald.
You found it in the Herald?
Read the Herald and...
Got a car at the moment?
Yeah, it's just outside.
A Nissan Evernier. Well, I can tell you that car's owned by us, because congratulations. You guys are the brand new owners of BMW.
So then he reaches behind him and he pulls the car cover off, and there it is, a sparkling brand new BMW. He hands over the keys and she drives away and she gets a new car for showing up.
That's awesome.
I wonder how many people saw that and went, nope.
That's what they were banking on.
Nope.
That's
stupid. That's I'm not going to drive down there. It's not going to happen.
So what's – I mean, explain to me the mindset in her mind that she decided to take the time out of her day to go to something that was so obviously an April Fool's Day prank. Like what gave her the confidence to do that or the desperation to do that, I guess?
I don't think April Fool's jokes are a part of a lot of people's lives, especially as they get older. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, it's April 1st, and I know that it's April Fool's, but I don't get pranked a lot. So it's not really I would guess she didn't.
So she thought it was real, you
I would
think?
I would guess so.
Because I would think that she 99%, like any reasonable person, would think, well, this is just a prank. But
it's like buying a lottery ticket.
What's the downside? Right. What's the downside of stopping by anyway?
What if?
So she traded in her 15-year-old Nissan, and now she's got this brand new $50,000 car. By the way, the dealership had no idea, they say, how many people were going to show up for it, and they had actually hired security guards in case riots broke out or big queues caused trouble. Wow. But it doesn't say in this article, the New Zealand Herald, whether anyone else ever showed up for the rest of the day.
You mean the Herald? So,
the Herald, yes.
Herald?
So she showed up. She got the car. I don't know if anybody else followed afterwards. And that would have been hilarious if somebody else came in and they said, I'm sorry, somebody came in 30 minutes ago and got the car.
Okay, you got me, April Fools, but I'm anyway, here. What about the car? Oh, we just gave it away.
Pretty genius April Fool's Day prank and lots of promotion for that BMW dealership in New Zealand. So there you go. Not all pranks make you feel bad. So there you go.
Pretty strong. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about today's Kevin DeMeade Show, shall we?
Oh, my God. Oh, it's terrible. What have you done?
Well, I think we have too much show today. Dr. Drew's going to be on the program.
We've hit a new low point.
Already? We have Jim Rome talking sports.
Okay, so he's a racist.
I'm not sure why. Oscar De La Hoya will be on the show.
So my question to you is that bad?
No, I'd say that's good.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And Matthew Perry will be on the show.
It's like a one-man party.
That's what Matthew Perry's known for. Brand new internet roundup.
Yeah, well, we all know that. Old news. No one likes a moaner.
No one.
And Andy Summers of the Police will be here.
Okay, well, I'm not the musician, all right?
Right.
You guys know what you're talking about.
Right. So he'll be here as well, talking about his documentary about being in the police from the beginning to the end. And it's fascinating. We're going to talk to him today. That's coming up this morning. We'll take a break and come back with the Showbiz Beat next.
And now, it's time for A Moment with Kevin.
Got up at 9, made my flight, came back, sharp as a tack today.
That was A Moment with Kevin.
Sharp as a tap.
That's the expression.
That's
right. Like it. Hey, Ralph Garman.
Hey!
It's your turn, man.
Boom! Congratulations to Yuengling Beer. Boom!
I just saw you tweet something about that. I was like, what are you doing?
Goddamn right I did. Boom!
What is that beer and why do you care?
The National Brewer Association says it's now replaced Sam Adams as the nation's best-selling craft beer. Boom! Suck it, Boston! Suck it!
What's it called?
Suck it, Boston.
I don't love it.
Yingling. Oh, because it's from Philly.
Beer, yes.
You say it's from Philly. All right, I got you.
World's oldest brewery from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Biatch!
What's the name of the beer, Ralph?
Yuengling.
Have you guys heard of it?
It
nope.
Sounds like a panda.
It does, yeah.
It does.
Well, no, I've never heard of it.
It's a delicious craft beer.
Huh.
Do you ever drink it, Ralph?
I drink it as much as I barrels and barrels and barrels of it.
He's wearing a hat that says Yuengling right now, to be fair.
When I go home, that's all I drink.
Wow.
Who knew?
I did. And now the world knows. Number one! Booyah!
Do you get it shipped to you, or do they sell it here?
They don't sell it here. I got to get it shipped to me. I usually just drink it when I'm back in Philly because it's kind of a pain in the ass to get it all the way out here. I have to tell friends to ship it stuff. It's just a pain in the butt.
Oh, because I can get Sam Adams here.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Still can't sell more than Yuengling. Booyah!
I'm number one. Victory is mine. So kiss my behind. Boom chakalaka laka. In your face. Boo. Who's your daddy?
I'm not a beer guy, Ralph, but how different
in the house.
How different is your beer to Allie's beer?
What's happening right now?
It's as different as champagne is to urine.
Okay.
That's all how right. different it is. That's the difference.
All right. We're happy for
you. Thank you. That's what I was waiting for. A little congratulations.
I don't know.
Because of all the hard work I put in at the Yuengling Brewery to get us to number one. Sierra Nevada's number three, by the way. Chico. Chico in the house. Chico, California.
What's
Sierra
happening
Nevada?
Right now?
We're talking beer. We're talking man talk, Kevin. Did you go sit down and have, oh, the Vodka Diet Red Bull, please. Oh, with an umbrella. So sit down.
Are you drunk right now?
Maybe.
Have a little Yuengling to celebrate on the way.
Maybe. Would that be
drunk?
The worst thing a guy could do?
Ralph is already drunk.
Next thing you know, you'll be proposing marriage and buying horses.
There we go. There's a thing called acting, where you pretend to be somebody else.
Right.
I don't know if you're familiar with it or not. Some people need a lesson or two on the definition of the word. Jamie Dornan, you know him from 50 Shades of Grey.
Sure.
He's got a new role in an upcoming film called The Fall. Yeah, it plays a serial killer.
Yeah, it's a TV show. Yeah, yeah, he's the star of that TV show.
Right.
It's on Netflix.
He tells the LA Times that to prepare for that role, he would follow females around in the London subway. He would stalk them.
Was it Bean?
No, it wasn't Bean. Jamie Dornan.
Oh.
And he said, although the process was creepy, he said it was exciting in a dirty way. And he found it intriguing and interesting as he stalked women in the tube.
Ooh, so rather than pretend to be a stalker, he actually was a stalker.
Yes. To which I say, not necessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Fall.
Yeah.
So when you see The Fall, you'll see a guy who's actually stalked women in the subway, which makes me enormously uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
And makes Bean turgid.
Yeah,
so
not at all.
The difference between those two things.
I don't stalk people because they're not in my house, you guys.
Well, you are a lazy stalker. I'll give you that.
True. You're a stalker from afar. You're more of a mental stalker than a physical stalker.
I stalk my wife from across the living room. That's about as far as I'm willing to go as a stalker.
Yeah. You know, she just looks at him and like just slinks out of the room.
Yeah.
It's so
back
long
up.
She gets out of eye shot.
Maybe he doesn't see me.
Yeah, he'll forget about me once I'm out of the room. He's like a dog. And this is some good news. David Duchovny appeared on David Letterman's late night show the other night and was talking about the updated version of the X-Files and announced that some of our favorites will be returning. Cigarette Smoking Man.
Love it.
Who we said a few months ago was dead. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sure.
That was bad on our part. He's
is
actually
he not
very
dead?
Much alive. No, William B. Davis is very much
I think we all
alive.
Just assumed cancer, right?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And Mitch Pileggi.
Yes.
Our buddy Mitch Pileggi, who, of course, was assistant director Walter Skinner on the show.
Love him so much.
He will be returning as well, so I'm very happy for that, because Mitch is not only a great guy and a great actor, but a friend of the show, so it is good news. That
what years was that on? I can't remember. Was it early 90s?
97 was it
oh,
last
97.
Year? Was the last year of it.
Oh, last year.
It was
year.
On the air for six years?
Eight
seven?
Seasons,
eight
I think.
Seasons.
Right. Eight or nine, maybe even. But yeah, it was most of the 90s.
Yeah. But they're back in a big way, so very excited about that. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. Another great actor, Christopher Maloney, is 54 years old today.
Wow.
Is that the lady sound for men you like?
I like him a lot.
There we
yep.
go. Rosalind Sanchez, the lovely and talented actress, is 42. Adam Rodriguez is 40. Michael Fassbender, he's got an enormous talent.
Yes, he does.
He does. Mm-hmm. He is 38
zoom, zoom.
Years old. Zoom, zoom, indeed.
Vodka and Diet Red Bull for me, please. No beer talk.
Bethany Joy Lenz is 34, and one of my favorite people, not just actors, but favorite people. He is a personal hero of mine as an actor and as a dude and as a director. His name is Clark Gregg. You know him from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
He is awesome.
He is an awesome person. He is 53 years old today. Happy birthday, Clark Gregg. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
If you have not yet stopped by KevinAmin.com or KROQ.com and checked out the opening act contest for Kevin Amin's April Foolishness this Saturday night at the Shrine, please do that. Lots of great comedy up there. 10 local comedians all vying to be the opening act at Saturday night. By the way, great turnout. Thousands and thousands of people have already voted. So I feel good even for the other nine that don't win. They're getting a lot of exposure for their comedy. But it's super fun. You should do it. And tomorrow on the show, we'll call the winner and let them know they're going to be on a bill with Tenacious D and Ralphie May and Jay Moore and all the rest.
I wouldn't hate any of them. Of the top 10. I mean, it's an amazing group. Let's talk about Stephen Hawking, and let's talk about the fact that he has now trademarked his name.
Well, that just makes sense.
It does. I agree.
I mean, if you're as famous as Stephen Hawking, and I know that he has had some success with greeting cards, with T-shirts, with mouse pads. By the way, Stephen Hawking, who I think by this point most people know who he is, one of the smartest guys that ever lived. He's a theoretical physicist, best-selling author. They made that Theory of Everything movie about him. He's got to have a pretty good sense of humor in that I didn't know that he already has T-shirts out. One called The Hawking Dead is a T-shirt.
I want that
and
so much.
He also has a Nerds with Attitude shirt, which I think is hilarious, too. But he's trademarked his name, and I guess he has big plans for some of the other products that he wants to do, some for profit and some for charitable reasons. And we thought, let's catch up with our old friend Dr. Hawking, because we're lucky enough to get him on the show from time to time. Hi, Stephen. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Kevin and Bean.
It's good to talk to you.
Thank you. It is always a pleasure to be on your show.
You're very kind. We were a little bit surprised, as I think a lot of people were, that you are now taking the added step of trademarking your name. What prompted your decision this time around, Doctor?
Well, with the success of the film, The Theory of Everything, I thought it was time to expand my brand.
Okay. So what types of things are you going to come out with?
I am going to make long green, yo, with all my new business ventures.
Okay. Well, we mentioned, you know, aprons and mugs and mouse pads and the greeting cards and everything like that. You're still staying in?
I haven't seen nothing yet, biatch.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, I have a new deal to be spokesperson for Rent-A-Wheel.
Okay. That's going to be bad news for little John.
I'm going to have mad rims on my chair. I'm also starting a line of Stephen Hawking running shoes.
That's not a tie-in that I think
really...
They
tell me they're very comfortable.
Right.
And durable.
Right.
Well, I mean, you don't...
I've been wearing them for years, and they don't run out or wear out.
But you don't walk.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Or run.
You
chair.
Son of a bitch.
No, I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm just saying, what do you need running shoes for?
Hope springs eternal.
Okay, all right.
I agree. Now, these greeting cards, what kind of greeting cards? Like everything from birthday to holiday, that type of thing?
Mostly, they will be Valentine's cards.
Oh, okay. Oh. Romantic.
Like, your beauty leaves me speechless.
Okay.
Okay. See, because you can't talk.
Will you be mine? I
popular.
Want to share my life with you.
Pretty
These
sweet ideas.
These are good.
I'm also unveiling a line of Stephen Hawking jumbo condoms.
Jumbo condoms?
For men whose penis is always expanding like the universe. You can explore the black hole.
Oh!
And also, I hope you will enjoy the new Stephen Hawking energy drink, Red Hawk.
Red Hawk.
Red Hawk.
Our slogan is, Red Hawk gives you legs.
You are going for it, Doctor. Thursday means our weekly visit with Dr. Drew Pinsky later on today. Also, we'll talk boxing with the great Oscar De La Hoya, Jim Rome on the program today. And he was the founding guitarist of The Police, Andy Summers, in studio with us. First, though, Kevin, give me a little piece of one of the great TV theme songs in television history, would you please? There it is. All sped up for 2015. I like it. The Odd Couple is back on CBS. It's the number one new hit of the season, by the way. Huge hit over there. Thursday nights at 8:30, Matthew Perry is the co-star of the show, along with our friend Thomas Lennon, and he joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Mr. Perry, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show, sir.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
Doing great. Sure. I know you're an actor and you're used to playing other characters, but it must be so hard for you to pretend to be a Rangers fan.
It is difficult. I'm a diehard Kings fan, so it's very difficult. But it makes sense because Oscar Madison lives in New York, so he would wear Rangers stuff.
It does make sense, and yet it hurts.
What are your feelings? I know that as a Kings fan, and I know you've been supporting the club for a long, long time, I know that you're used to the final week of the season for years now, holding your breath to see whether they're going to make the playoffs or not. This season, I mean, they got six games left. Obviously, it can still happen. They've done it tighter than this before, but how are you feeling? Optimistic at all?
They had an okay start to their road trip, and then they ended badly, so now I'm not sure. They were in, and now I'm not even sure if they're in now, but
no,
I'm going to be out of the home games.
We're 2 points out of the wild card and 3 points behind third place in the Pacific. So we're close.
That's Calgary, right?
Yes, the Flames, yeah.
Winnipeg for the wild card, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll be at all the games supporting them. And I hope that they make it. Once they make it, then everybody would be scared of them.
Yeah, it's weird that way. It's really weird that way, in that it's almost impossible to make the playoffs. And yet, if you get in the playoffs, it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, especially for the Kings.
Right, exactly. Now, what was it like? And we are going to get to the Odd Couple, I promise. We're not hijacking the interview for hockey talk, Matthew. But what was it like for you? You were a hockey fan because you grew up in Canada, exposed to your whole life, I imagine. But when you moved to Los Angeles to be an actor, did you kind of feel like a little bit of an outlier as a hockey fan? Like, there weren't a million of you back then, right?
I was always a Kings fan. My dad lived in Los Angeles my whole life, so I was always a Kings fan from the time I was a little kid. Even when I lived in Montreal, when I was like 5 years old, I would go to the Kings games and be the only person screaming when they scored a goal.
Oh, my God. Did you get your ass kicked?
Then, back then, they rarely scored goals against the Canadians because the Canadians were the team.
Like Guy Carboneau days.
But I've been a Kings fan since the Butch Goring days. I mean, I've been a Kings fan forever. And how to segue into the Odd Couple, I have no idea. But I'll just say that the Odd Couple is hilarious.
Well, all right. Let's talk about the Odd Couple. As I mentioned, it's a smash hit. It's the highest rated news show of this television season. It's on 8:30 CBS again tonight. Is this true that this series was your idea? It came to you almost in a vision, driving down the road one day. Hey, we need to remake The Odd Couple and put it on CBS. Was it as simple as that, Matthew?
It was true. I was driving in my car and I thought, I think we should do The Odd Couple again. I should play Oscar Madison and we should do it at CBS. And it all came to fruition.
Tell us about, we love Thomas Lennon so much. Tell us about working with him, because he is great on your show.
Well, he's terrific, and we were on a big search to find a Felix Unger, and then he finally just came in and started talking to us, and he talked to us for about 10 minutes, and we were like, my God, we just met Felix Unger. And I still can't tell whether he was acting or whether he was playing the part, or whether he was just himself. I couldn't tell.
When CBS said, listen, you're going to follow Big Bang Theory, were you like, and we're good. Things are working.
Yeah, we were very happy that day. I mean, that's the biggest comedy on television. It's the biggest lead-in we could have had, and it has really helped us get good numbers. So we were thrilled to be there.
The Odd Couple was on a long, long time ago. I guess this is an impossible question, but I would imagine most people don't know about it that watch your show.
It's amazing. We don't like to think about this, but it was 40 years ago that the show went off the air.
Wow.
So I really thought it was time to do it again. There's a whole generation that hasn't seen it, and there's a generation that loves it and would like to see it again. So I think we're proving now, because we're getting such big audiences, that people were ready to see a new version of it.
And do you love being able to show up and just be a slob and not have to shave and pretty much just wear whatever you slept in last night, Matthew?
It's really fun. I spend very little time in hair and makeup.
Nice.
And I just sort of, it's a very laid-back performance, much different than I've ever done before, much different than Chandler, and it's been really fun to play him.
Tell me about getting a new TV show on the schedule and getting fans is a difficult process for even good shows. Did you go into this with higher hopes? Did you think, this is going to nail it, or you had no idea?
Well, we had the title, and we had me in it, so we were hopeful that it would get picked up, and it was a good script. I say so having written the script, so I'm just bragging now.
All right.
we had a lot of power behind the show before it started, so we had high hopes that it would make the air.
Your first job was 85 on Charles in Charge. Do you ever think to yourself, you know what? I could live for lifetimes on the money I've made, but I keep acting. What is it that drives you? What makes you want to keep working when you essentially could live the rest of your life just hanging out?
Well, that's the problem. I can't just live the rest of my life hanging out. I tried that for about 2 years. I was like, I'm going to retire and just play video games, but there's only so many video games you can play.
It's true.
I had to get back to work.
Well, I got to tell you, it's a funny show. It's you and Thomas Lennon, and Yvette Nicole Brown is also great on your show.
Oh, she's terrific. She's terrific.
Lindsay
Sloan and Wendell Pierce and Dave Foley. It's a really wonderful cast, and that's why I hope we get to keep going, because everybody's just so nice. It's just a great
team to work with.
Now, how many episodes have you shot and how many are going to air this season?
We shot 12 and we finished a couple of months ago, so they're going to air all of them because I hope they're going to air all of them. They're doing very well. So, and then the hope is that we get picked up for a second season.
Well, we hope so, too. If you haven't checked it out yet, it's tonight, Thursday night at 8:30 on CBS after the Big Bang Theory, talking The Odd Couple with Matthew Perry. Great to have you on the program today, man. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Very funny episode on tonight. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Thank you.
It is 6:52.
Oscar De La Hoya joins us in about 10 minutes or so, talking about boxing in Los Angeles. By the way, he lost to Pacquiao and Mayweather. He lost to both of them, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, why don't you leave so, that?
Are we gonna start with that?
Yeah, leave
that
no, with
in
that.
The just, cabinet.
I was just wondering. Yes. I was just wondering who a guy like that roots for when he's lost to. I mean, if he'd lost to one of them, then he'd root for the other guy. But he's lost to both of them. So now what does he do? Now he's in trouble, right?
I don't know, but I'm uncomfortable with this because we still haven't talked to him yet.
Right.
That's still coming up in like 10 minutes.
Okay, so we'll find out. Right. We'll find out what we're talking
so
about.
So you're a big loser, Oscar.
You lost it.
I see you being such a loser.
How do we
what's
feel
it
about that?
Damn it, wasn't going to go
in front
like
of the
that.
Glass pane window and jump up and down to your testicles bounce?
I support that American's right to be naked in his own house. All right, Ralph is here tonight for the Showbiz Beat on a Thursday. What's going on?
Here's the thing that I loved. That I saw on the interwebs this morning. Did you see Rihanna pranking Jimmy Kimmel for April Fool's Day?
Yeah, that was awesome.
It was pretty awesome.
Waking him up?
If you had a chance, yeah, check it out online. It is Rihanna, along with the collusion of Jimmy's wife, Molly. And what they did is they came into Jimmy's house around 1 o'clock in the morning, and Rihanna woke Jimmy up by blasting the boombox, and they had disco lights going, and she was throwing fake money in his face. Then she was singing Bitch Better Have My Money, her new single, to him at full volume at 1 o'clock in the morning. And Jimmy was surprised, to say the least.
Gotta tell you, it's a pretty good way to wake up.
Peter.
Yep.
She didn't bone him, you know, she was just singing.
They didn't show that part, yeah. Ralph. Don't be ridiculous. You know how showbiz works.
Anyway, it's very funny, and if you know Jimmy and you know how much he loves to prank people, you can appreciate that he was on the receiving end of this April Fool's gag. But just want to give you a shout-out if you hadn't heard about it or seen it. It's online now. You can check it out. I think if you go to Rihanna Pranks Jimmy Kimmel on YouTube, you can find it there. But very entertaining, so find that. Speaking of late-night hosts, James Corden doing very well for himself.
Yay.
He's doing great guns when it comes to the viral videos. First, he had that History of Tom Hanks movies things that he did with Tom Hanks. Which is great. Now his underwear ad spoof with David Beckham has taken off. It's very funny. Popular online. And like other late night show hosts, James has been tapped to MC a big award show. Congratulations. He will be the MC of the 2015 Council of Fashion Designers of America Awards. All right, he's new. He's new, okay? He's warming up.
It's not the Emmys.
All right, but he'll get there.
Are you sure that's not an April Fool's joke that
no,
came out yesterday?
He is going to be... He's going to be hosting the Council of Fashion Designers of America Awards, and I think
that's
it'll be great.
Worst,
that's one of my favorite award shows
the
of the year.
That's the worst named event ever.
I love that award show. It's one of my favorites. ABC Family, home, of course, of Baby Daddy, our favorite show. Baby
sure.
Daddy over there on ABC Family. They have just given the go-ahead to three new reality series yesterday. Startup U is a reality show about a group of kids who take a semester at Draper University in Silicon Valley, and then they pitch their ideas to capitalist Tim Draper and a panel of experts for a next business startup. It's kind of like Shark Tank, but for kids.
All right.
Interesting idea.
Yeah.
Next Step Reality, New York City. It's about a real estate firm that helps recent college grads find apartments in New York City.
Wait.
Next Step Reality.
Wait, that's a show?
I'm sorry. Next Step Reality. Not reality. Next Step Reality.
No.
Really?
You find an apartment in New York.
Bow, bow, bow.
Where's
not a
the
show?
Show?
That is not that. A show.
But there's going to be college grads trying to find apartments.
Right.
Right, but how is that a show?
Because the apartments are filled with snakes.
Okay, now I'm in.
I would watch that.
They're not, actually.
But it's not going to be that good.
I don't know what makes a...
Wow.
Out of that. However, Monica the Medium? That's right, you heard me. Monica the Medium is a story about a junior at Penn State who is a medium and can talk to dead people. She gets messages from beyond while she takes classes there at Penn State. She's Monica the Medium.
Come on.
All right, are you making this up?
That's
so we're supposed to pick out which reality show is the fake one?
These have green lights over there at ABC Family. How do I not have a show on ABC Family? Apparently they will put anything on television over there.
That is crazy.
Monica the medium.
Now, can't she help the kids?
I dated Monica the Large in college for a couple of minutes, but it was just, I didn't tell anyone about it.
Can't Monica help those kids find apartments in New York?
That's a great idea.
Seems like.
Find them all and tell the kids at Startup U what idea Tim Draper is going to like when they pitch it.
Right?
Oh, crossovers.
I like it.
My new favorite reality show by far, and I'm not kidding, is the new one on TLC. Premieres on May the 9th.
Uh-oh.
Which is?
It's a little game show.
Labor Games.
That I like to call Labor Games. Labor Games.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah. Labor Games.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know anything about this show.
How can you not? It's the greatest show that's ever put together.
Is it women in labor who then have to compete on a game show?
It is couples who are in labor, and they go into the hospital room. Host Lisa Arch goes into the hospital room, and they say, would you like to play some games for some fabulous prizes, including some college money, college fund towards your new baby's future?
And while they're trying to squeeze out a baby.
And if the couple agrees, while she's dilating, they wheel in all of the accoutrements of a game show, and they unleash the hounds, and they play the game right there in the hospital room.
Hey, guys.
It is labor games.
Anything you want to tell us, Allie McKay?
Hey, guys. I shot this pilot.
What?
I shot the pilot. And then I got this job. And they wanted to go with a mom because I was too snarky.
Oh, you snark. You snarktastic.
So they
this was Allie's show.
Yeah, this was my show.
Wow, I had no idea.
I know. That's why it's so funny.
You missed out on being on the greatest show ever in the history of television.
Or
so now I feel bad.
So you could have been the host of this show?
Labor Games.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm all about the Labor Games. I've seen a clip and it's awesome.
The clip I saw, they went in at like 1 a.m. Like they just have to do it.
Yeah, you were literally on call this job. Just the pilot itself, I was on call for 3 weeks.
Oh my god!
For one family.
Now are you happy or sad?
To play Labor Games.
Are you happy or
Let's
sad?
Play Labor Games. Come on! How do people not see the genius, the majesty?
So the mom-to-be is laying there in her hotel room.
She's 3 centimeters.
She's sweating and she's
got
cursing at her husband.
Time to kill, Bean. Nothing but time to kill.
And now she's supposed to concentrate on what's the capital of the Republic of Georgia?
I mean, no. They're all kid-related questions.
Did I win?
Everyone knows that, Ralph.
Yeah, Ralph.
Oh, they're kid-related games?
Yeah. And the thing is, unless they've changed it, the grand prize, if you get up to, I believe it was 7 questions, is $32,000, which over 18 years matures into a full college tuition.
All right. So it's worth it. Okay.
Yeah, it's
paying for your kid's college education by answering a few simple questions while you're just waiting for your cervix to dilate anyway.
You're not going anywhere.
Let's
do it.
Let's play the labor game.
who did they get to host, Allie, after you?
Her name is Lisa.
Lisa Arch.
Arch
is the host.
We got to get her on the show.
We got to get her on the show.
We got to talk to her ahead of the premiere.
Clearly.
Absolutely. Because let's play the labor game. How can they not have a guy host that? I so would have been the host of the labor games.
You would have done
said,
well,
let me
too.
See your cervix. I'm going to take a look. And I would put on one of those miner's helmets. Or turn on the lamp. And let me see if you're ready to play the labor games or not. Husband, you might want to leave the room.
Oh,
this really is the golden age of television.
We live in a magical time. Today's celebrity birthdays, actress Bethany Joy Lenz is 34 years old today.
I'm sorry, Ralph. I'm unfamiliar with Miss Lenz. Who is she?
She is an actress who is 34 years old.
And she is known for, and I would recognize her from?
She is known for her work, where she has been listed in the cast list as Bethany Joy Lenz.
All right.
So we're all on One Tree Hill.
One Tree Hill. Okay, well, she's probably hot.
Michael Fassbender is 38 years old today. Adam Rodriguez from CSI Miami. I don't know if he's still on that show or not, but I remember him from that show. He's 40 years old. Rosalind Sanchez is 42 years old. Is she from Grey's Anatomy, I want to say? Yes? No?
I don't know. That show's still on.
Hey, Dave, came Mexico? Rosalind Sanchez. You know so much about Bethany Joy Lenz. How about Rosalind Sanchez?
From the movies.
Thank you. From the movies.
Thank you, Dave. We got a pretty deep research bench here on the Kevin and Bean Show.
Here's an idea. Don't put their name on my birthday list, Dave, unless you know who the F they are for future reference.
Well, he doesn't know most of the people he puts on that list. That's a good point.
Come on.
All right, maybe I should do some research.
Last on Devious Maids.
Devious Maids.
Oh, Devious Maids.
I think maybe she was on Entourage, too. She might have played the tequila girl in Entourage. Remember the one Turtle was in love with?
Ralph, you know that we're on the air right now.
What?
No, that's not her.
That's not her. No, it's not her. Rosalind Chance was on Devious Maids, but it wasn't the girl from Entourage.
Right.
Apparently, she is also known from Without a Trace, apparently. Is
yes.
TV
now I know
show
exactly
she's been
who you're
and that
talking
Shark
about.
Tank for Kids she's going to be on.
and the Labor Game.
The Labor
Let's
game.
Play the Labor Games! Christopher Maloney is 54 years old today. I know what he was on. Law & Order SVU. That's what I know him from.
There you go.
I remember him back in the days when he was a bad guy on NYPD Blue. He had an arc on NYPD Blue where he was giving...
Still on the air.
Delaney. Dana Delaney? Not Dana Delaney. What the... Kim Delaney. He was Kim Delaney's ex, and he was really a bad dude on that show. He was great. I remember saying, who's that guy? And they said, it's Christopher Maloney. I said, that guy's going places.
Ralph,
what's going on?
Ralph came in today drunk. I'm telling you.
And actor Clark Gregg, one of our favorites, Clark Gregg from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He is 53 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. Let's play the Labor Game.
Always exciting when we have this next gentleman on the phone with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. He has won 10 boxing world titles in 6 different weight classes. He's an Olympic gold medalist, and of course, he is the founder of Golden Boy Promotions. We're talking about the great Oscar De La Hoya, who joins us back on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Hey, Oscar, how are you, man?
Hey, great. How are you? Good morning.
Doing fine. Great to have you on. It's exciting doings in Los Angeles on tonight, I guess it is, at the Belasco Theater, this L.A. Fight Club that you've had going for a while. Maybe some people haven't heard about it. What's the deal?
Well, the deal is bringing boxing back to Los Angeles, especially downtown Los Angeles. I mean, we see the expansions and the growth of downtown LA, and we see how you know, there's a need for entertainment, and so I mean, obviously boxing is right up my alley, so I came up with this concept of bringing these live fights to the LA consumer. And I mean, it takes me back to the days where the great Olympic Auditorium where it produced many local world champions. So that's the idea behind it, is to bring boxing back to the local fans.
And these are going to be professional fighters, amateur fighters, both?
These are professional fighters,
okay.
Fighters who are just beginning, fighters who are 4-rounders, 6-rounders. But the idea is to match them up tough, to match them up evenly. You don't have one-sided fights. You have competitive fights. It's a very intimate arena, about 1,200 people. I believe we're already sold out. The first event sold out in a couple of days. So the fight fans really want to be up close and personal with the fighter. They want to be, paying their $10, $15, $20 ticket and feel as if they're in the front row. So this concept is quite a unique one, but hopefully it can stick.
It's also on at 7 p.m. on Fox Sports 1.
Exactly. Correct. It's televised nationally. So a lot of the youth here in Los Angeles, the local talents, will be obviously you will have that exposure on a national basis. So the idea really is to create, hopefully, the next Golden Boy, the next champion who hails from Los Angeles.
And it's for the casual fan as well, because you're in there, you're seeing it up close and personal, and then the fights end and you're like, woohoo, let's party. It turns into a nightclub.
Exactly. And the whole idea is just to have fun. The idea is to go there, enjoy yourself, entertainment. We have a live DJ with music in between rounds. So, you know, the people can just go out there and just have a good time.
Oscar, when you were growing up in East Los, you know, back in the early 80s when you were getting into boxing and everything, were you able to watch a lot of boxing on TV, or did you go see boxing live in downtown LA like the kids you're trying to get to do today are? What was your experience?
I actually at that age, when I started boxing at 5 years old, so my father would take me to the Grand Olympic Auditorium. I mean, times were different back then. My father would drop me off next to the concession stand so I can buy my hot dog, and he would go out and sit
sit in the nosebleeds up on the, you know, to watch his fight. So, you know, it was quite an experience for me. It was, it introduced me to boxing. That's when I fell in love with the sport. You know, I'm not telling the parents, leave your kids to a fight.
Drop off your five-year-old.
Leave them out there wandering around, right? But, you know, boxing is a sport. Boxing taught me everything I know today. You know, I mean, boxing is a sport where it taught me discipline. It taught me how to work hard, how to never give up. So, you know, this tradition I want to continue and pass along to the next generation, you know, because sports for any kid is healthy.
Do you miss boxing? I know you're always happy when you could retire and still be healthy, and especially in your case, not mess up that pretty face. But are there times where you go, man, I would love to get back in the ring and fight?
Not one day passes where I think about making a comeback.
No, I'm not suggesting a comeback. I'm just wondering if you miss it, if you actually miss the thrill of being in that kind of competition. Because, you know, it was such an important part of your life for so long with the Olympics and then as a pro for all those years. I would just imagine that it would be tough to replace that adrenaline that you used to get from fighting.
I remember back in 1992 when I won the Olympic gold medal in Barcelona. And I came back to Los Angeles, and there were thousands of people in the airport waiting for me. And I had made the decision that I was going to retire from boxing because I fulfilled my ultimate goal of winning that gold medal for my mother. And so the next morning, I couldn't help myself and get out of bed, run 10 miles in the morning, and go to the gym and spar 10 rounds and. It's just in my bloodline. I love boxing. I love the sport, and I miss it every single day. The adrenaline rush of competing, going up in the ring, not necessarily getting hit.
Right, that's not fun.
Yeah, that's not a lot of fun. But the fact that you're competing and you know, to try and be the very best, that was always my motivation to fight. So. Yeah, I miss that feeling every single day.
Do you still get in the ring and spar and work out that way or no?
No, I haven't stepped inside the ring ever since I retired. Again, I like getting hit.
Well, I know, but they have like all the padding and the head, you know, gear and all that stuff. But that's fine. Tell me about trying to get this started in Los Angeles, because it seems like boxing is so splintered and there's so many different organizations and so many different promoters. It just seems like a difficult nut to crack, even though you are already obviously in.
Yes, exactly. I mean, look, boxing is so fragmented. I mean, there's so many promoters, there's so many managers, there's so many fighters. So who's who? Obviously, look, we have a great relationship with HBO, who is the leader, the premier network on televising the best championship boxing there is to watch. And so the idea and the motivation behind this is to look for those individuals who are going to transcend the sport. Like, for instance, we promote the future of boxing right now in Saul Canelo Alvarez, the redheaded Mexican. You know, he's just 23 years old, and they're calling him the Elvis of Mexico. When he fights, ratings are huge, and his pay-per-view numbers are tremendous. So right after Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, once they drift off into the sunset, after May 2nd, I believe you know, their careers are maybe going to come to an end because of their age. They're 38, 37 years old. You know, they have to retire at some point. You know, Saul Canelo Alvarez is the next superstar. So the idea is to continue building these young kids who are gonna make it into that pay-per-view platform. And you know, it takes time. It takes cultivating. It takes a lot of planning and promoting. So it starts in the grassroots level. It starts local, and so this fight series, LA Fight Club, is a perfect platform to identify those young the next generation of young champions.
All right, and we can't let you go before talking about Mayweather Pacquiao. What do you think? Are you giving predictions?
I love the fight. I love the fight.
Right.
Manny Pacquiao keeps on posting these videos on his Instagram.
Right.
And he's looking sharp. He's looking fast. I have not seen a Manny Pacquiao look this sharp and this fast ever since he fought me back in 2009, where he stopped me in the eighth round. So if we see a Manny Pacquiao that we saw against myself, I think Manny Pacquiao has a tremendous, tremendous shot at beating Mayweather. But then again, Mayweather's a fighter who, when he gets hit, he doesn't necessarily get on his bicycle, as we say in boxing. He just boxes you. He's just a defensive genius.
Right.
And so I believe Manny Pacquiao's going to come out and fight as hard as he can and make it an exciting fight.
L.A. Fight Club at the Belasco Theater. There may be just a couple of tickets left if you want to check out for tonight at goldenboypromotions.com, and we'll keep our eyes peeled for the next one in downtown L.A. Get a chance to see boxing up close and personal. Tickets start at just $20. Mr. De La Hoya, always a pleasure to have you on the Kevin Beach Show, sir. Thanks so much for the time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right. Let's give away some tickets for Foolishness. We're going to do that
right now.
Let's do it. 1-800-520-1067 if you want to be in the party bus section at Kevin and Bean's April Foolishness. Call now. Saturday night at the Shrine, it's Kevin and Bean April Foolishness 2015. Great lineup again this year. Completely sold out, so thanks for that, with Gabriel Iglesias and Ralphie May, Jay Moore, Adam Ray, Eliza Schlesinger, Brad Williams, house music by DJ Mike Relman. Oh, yes, a little band called Tenacious D. And I guess we're looking for D fans here, Kevin, to try to give away a pair of tickets up close in the party bus section.
It's D fans, but it's more Jack Black. And this is a game that's called the Jack Black-Off.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to play the new game show that's sweeping the nation. Pit your knowledge of Jack Black movies against other listeners. You can win tickets to April Foolishness if you can win the Jack Black-Off.
All right, we're talking about access to the VIP reception with the Kevin and Bean Show, limited edition Party Bus Section Show t-shirt, and VIP parking for this Saturday night at the Shrine. We're looking for Jack Black movie fans. So how does it work? We play a clip from a film.
Correct.
All you have to do is tell us what Jack Black movie that is, and
Correct.
You go into the drawing to win the ticket. That sounds easy enough.
All right, let's begin with Jorge from Southgate. Hi.
Hello.
What up, Jorge? Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling, man.
Thank you very much.
All right, we're gonna play a clip of a Jack Black movie, and you just have to identify it. You ready?
I got this.
All right, here you go.
Orphans, listen to me. Listen to Ignacio. I know it is fun to wrestle. A nice pile drive to the face, mm-hmm. or a punch to the face. But you cannot do it because it is in the Bible not to wrestle your neighbor.
All right, name of that movie?
Greatest movie ever made, Nacho Libre.
The greatest movie ever made indeed, sir. Correct. You are in the drawing.
I liked it a lot, but I don't know that I'd go greatest of all time.
I love Jorge, who says, I got this, yep. and then yeah. he does.
All right, let's go to Lauren in Montebello. Hi,
morning,
Lauren.
People. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. I'm sorry, I was expecting a girl. Lauren is your name?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Here's your movie clip.
God of Rock, we are your humble servants. Please give us the power to blow people's minds with our high-voltage rock. In your name we pray. Amen.
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 Now let's get out there and melt some faces!
Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny.
School of Rock.
Yeah, your second guess was right, but sorry.
You didn't win the...
The Jack Black-Off!
Thank you for playing. Let's go to Ashley in Valley Village.
Good morning.
You knew that last one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Here's your movie. You tell us what it is.
He hypnotized you. You're saying that all the pretty girls I've met lately aren't really pretty. Oh, there she is. There's Rosemary.
Where?
Right there. Is she behind the rhino?
What Jack Black film is that, please, Ashley?
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Shallow Hell.
Sweet. Was she mocking me?
I think she was mocking me.
Ooh, ooh. Is that what you were doing, Ashley? How dare you? How dare you?
I couldn't love Ashley more.
Ashley is my foe.
Not
put her on hold. We must never speak with her again.
She wins the fake drawing that we're going to do. I'll tell you that.
The drawing is real.
Right. All right. Let's go to Alphonse.
What's up, guys?
In Little Rock. Hi there.
I just want to ask, Ali, do you love the D?
The Tenacious D, I sure do.
clarifications necessary.
And the other D,
hell yeah.
All right, you ready for your movie clip?
Yeah.
Here you go.
Holy on that horn and get some firepower, boy!
Jesus Christ!
Listen, you silly you calling that snake and Nate and get us some of them now! I do it myself, but I'm kind of goddamn busy!
Oh, that's a mess.
Yeah, is that Tropic Thunder?
It is.
It is! Nicely done.
Yeah.
Nicely done. You hold on. I hope you lose to Ashley, but we're going to put you in the drawing.
There's a good group of folks already in.
All right, let's go to Rich in Woodland Hills. She mocked you twice, Bean.
Yeah, she did.
Hi, Rich.
Hey, Phyllis.
All right, you ready for your movie?
Yeah.
Here you go. Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the eighth wonder of the world!
That's the end of the clip. So
that's like four words.
It was.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the eighth wonder of the world.
Sorry, guys.
It's King Kong.
Yeah, yeah, four words.
Okay. Rich is right now? So bitter. So mad at you.
Well, in his defense, it was a short clip. The School of Rock one, that's for sure. All but right. There's also a lot given away in that those four words, the eighth wonder of the world. I mean, you could put that together with King Kong. All right, we got time for one more. Who's our final contestant?
All right, let's go to Mike in Wilmington. Hi there.
Hi, party people.
All right, you ready for your clip?
Yes.
Here you go.
Come on, Cage! Let's fight his music with our music. There's just no way that we can win. That was a masterpiece. Listen to me. He rocks too hard because he's not a mortal man. God damn it, Cage!
Can you figure out what
that was easier than King Kong.
Can you figure out what that movie is?
Yeah, that was Tenacious D and the Pick of Destiny.
That's correct. There you go. All right. So Mike is a yes, Alphonse is a yes, Ashley is my mortal foe and enemy, and Jorge also in the drawing. Only one will win tickets in the Party Bus section for Kevin Dean's April Fool's 2015, Saturday night at the Shrine. Allie McKay, who's our winner, please?
Okay, I am shuffling.
Make it fair. No cheating.
Did I not ship? I just shuffled and picked the first one. Ashley is the winner.
Yes!
Wait, can we ask Ashley a question, or is she gone?
Sure. No, she's there.
Oh, I'm here.
Ashley, can you settle a heated debate here? The Holiday, great movie, right?
No!
Right?
I have not seen it.
Yeah, no one has.
How dare you?
No one has. Ashley, congratulations. Thanks for playing the game. We appreciate it.
You sure know you're Jack Black. You've just played the Jack
Black
off.
If you missed the Kevin Amin interview with Mumford & Sons from a couple of days ago, you can find that at krock.com or on the podcast for what day they come in? Tuesday, I want to say. Hey, speaking of great rock bands, Andy Summers was in the biggest band in the world as the guitarist for The Police, and we've all seen his documentary. It didn't look like that much fun, did it?
there was a lot of...
Ten.
A lot of downsides to being that famous,
yeah. I think. So anyway, fascinating story, fascinating man. He'll be joining us next hour on the Kevin Amin Show. Plus, we'll talk some sports with Jim Rome. First, though, how about a brand new Kevin Amin Internet Roundup?
Yo, K-Rock listeners around the world, it is time for the Internet Roundup. So tell all the boys and girls, we've got fun and sexy, even music too. We've got all the greatest videos, and they're mostly on YouTube.
King of Mexico, how are you, sir?
Good morning, guys. Doing great.
Good batch, right?
Yeah.
Don't miss, we won't play audio because it's just the song, but don't miss the Humpty Dance done by the Muppets on this edition of the Internet Roundup. It's pretty classic.
So good.
A couple goes in to get an ultrasound of their 14-week-old baby, and the doctor says, hey, your baby is clapping in the womb. Did you have any idea that that is a thing that happens?
Did this video come out yesterday?
No, this video came out about a week ago. The baby is clapping in the womb, so while they're shooting video of the ultrasound, they start singing a little song that's kind of appropriate. It makes it a pretty magic video.
If you're happy and you know, clap your hands. If you're happy and you know it.
And your face will sure show it. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
There's a kid that's clapping along in the womb.
That's cute.
Kid was offbeat, stupid kid.
Stupid kid, yeah. Forky weeks old.
Hey, I've seen people do this by tying a tooth to a string and then the doorknob and then swinging the door open to pull a tooth out. I'd never seen anybody do it with a Camaro, but that's what this father did to remove a loose tooth in his little kid.
No!
Oh, both of the parents are out there as they tie a string to a car on one end and the kid's mouth on the other.
Didn't Jackass do that? And didn't the guy break up his face?
Yeah, his face was shattered.
That's crazy stupid.
Yeah.
Oh. Dave, we got the Clippers in this edition of the Kevin and Bean Internet Roundup. Tell us about this prank and forward they did.
Well, they went to this hair salon and they were, you know, feeding lines to the barbers and stuff like that. But then what the real prank was, they took the owner of the hair salon who needed to renovate her place and gave her $10,000 at the Clippers game.
Yeah, so. It was pretty cool. DeAndre Jordan and Glenn Davis, Big Baby, they are in the back room of the hair salon. And then they're feeding, you know, lines to the people who are cutting the hair. And they're hearing all the customers come in that day who are trash talking them before they confront them. It's pretty funny.
I find him attractive.
I think DeAndre is pretty cute. What do you think?
My favorite player is Big Baby.
I would like him, but he went to LSU. I'm a Kentucky fan.
Okay. Axon, would you say that to Big Baby's face?
Would you say it to his
right
face?
To his face. I'm not afraid of him. Because I got a heart of a champion.
And then, of course, the guys come out and confront all the customers who are trash talking. It's very funny. The Clippers are champion. They're very likable guys, these Clippers.
Dave. Not to the rest of the NBA.
Although they're calling out their fans lately.
Shut up.
We might need to get into that.
Shut up.
Iggy Azalea, as you know, sometimes just raps nonsense on stage in the middle of her songs, and somebody put together a very funny Vine compilation of those things.
Nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
What
it's
is she
amazing.
Doing? Boy, look, I'm an Iggy fan, and even I'm like, what are you
what
saying?
Are you doing?
That? Yeah.
Honest Trailers are back. They always do a great job. They can make simple movies seem confusing, so you can just imagine for a minute what they can do with Interstellar, which is one of the most brain-scratching movies of the last 10 years.
But above all, he's a father to his beloved daughter, Merv.
Merv!
Come on, Merv.
Make him stay, Merv.
Don't let me leave, Merv! Merv! Merv!
And his son, Tom, who by comparison he couldn't give two s*** about.
Monday morning when we came in from the weekend, Allie, you had already seen this video with Vince Neil trying to sing the national anthem.
Wow.
He's worse than any fan they could have pulled out of the crowd at this USFL Las Vegas game, right?
It didn't go well.
I would imagine that there's a system where you have to try out and whatever, but they probably just blew it off for him because he's a singer. And
I
so
think
no,
he's the owner of the team.
He's the owner of the Vegas squad.
So he can make the decision himself.
Oh, yeah.
But as the lead singer of a long-running multi-platinum band, mm-hmm. shouldn't he be able to sing any song better than this?
Who sing the
part. That was the best.
That was the best part of that song?
But that is terrible for karaoke from some drunk college student. That's terrible,
and
right?
And you can tell the crowd is really clapping because it's over.
That's right, exactly.
Because they're excited.
Here's somebody who on the Kevin Bean Internet Roundup, we're going through videos right now on K-Rock. You can go to krock.com or kevinbean.com to see him. Here's a guy who decided to just annoy one of his coworkers like constantly over and over and over again all day long trying to get him into a conversation where he just tells him bad jokes.
Hey, Andrew, did you hear about that new broom that came out? It's sweeping the nation. Hey, Andrew, did you know my computer sings? It's Adele. Hey, Andrew.
Yo!
I tried to find that book about small penises for you. I don't think it's in yet.
Hey, Andrew. I just got a job crushing cans. It's so depressing. Andrew, have a good night.
We just found out that Allie loves puns, by the way.
Poor Andy,
finally,
that poor bastard.
Yeah, poor Andy. Somebody's going to punch him.
Finally, on this edition of the Kevin Bean Internet Roundup, this was very funny. The Rock hosted Saturday Night Live this weekend, and he did a great job. Fourth time hosting, and he always is very, very funny. And they did one of their little viral videos that they do of him playing Bambi in a revenge Disney sequel. And it is great. You see The Rock there with the deer ears on, and he's going to go track down the hunters that killed his mom. And it has so many louds, you're really going to like it.
Love it.
Starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson as Bambi.
When I was a boy, they took away my mother. Now it's time for them to pay. Dearly.
See what he did?
He's telling Andrew bad jokes at work as well. You can see all of these videos and so much more every week at KevinAndBean.com or KROQ.com. It's a brand new Kevin and Bean Internet Roundup.
Those videos were awesome. Now baby, go watch the Internet Roundup. Yeah!
It's Kevin and Bean on KROQ.
I didn't understand half of that. I didn't understand half of what she was saying.
Snidely Whiplash, what's going on with you?
Time for the Ralph Showbiz Beat, and then just after the top of the hour, Jim Rome, then Andy Summers.
Can't wait to talk to Jim Rome. Talk about his horse, scalded balls.
I don't think that.
Nope. Running at Santa Anita this weekend.
I can't believe it, Jim.
It's the name
scalded
of the
balls will be there, Derby Days.
Not scalded balls.
Can't wait to get out there on the track. Love that sport. Love it. Best athletes I know. Never complain. They always show up. Always want to win. Not like Aaron Hernandez up on the stand there.
All right, so we don't have to talk to Jim now?
Jim,
I feel like
please.
We just did.
I'm trying to do showbiz, Jim. Please, can you just wait your turn? Oh, sorry about that. Now I'm done. Speaking of racing, Santa Anita Derby Days happens Saturday at Santa Anita Park, and K-Rock is having a microbrew festival there. It's going to be a blast. You got beers, you got ponies. You got Metalachi performing. And I'd like to give you a 4-pack of VIP tickets right now to the K-Rock Microbrew Santa Anita Derby Days Party. This Saturday at Santa Anita Park. Great park. You get to be in the infield. You have a blast with all the microbrews that are there. I'm giving away 4 tickets for VIP admission, backstage access, 4 drink tickets, and $106 in a voucher that you can use to bet on the ponies. I put all my money on Scalded Balls. Greatest horse I've ever been around. It's going to be winning at Santa Anita this weekend. I said it. I called my shot. All right, Jim, just 1 second. Let me just finish up here. Give me a call now, 1-800-520-1067. If you'd like to go to Santa Anita this weekend. Let's see. The gates open at 11. Infield opens up at 11, so I make a caller number 11. Caller number 11 at that number, 1-800-520-1067. We'll win the VIP package. You've got to be 21 years of age or older, however, because there is booze involved. So keep that in mind.
Hold up your beers if you're drinking.
Speaking of beers, Yingling, 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 Yingling.
Ralph came in on fire today about this.
Yingling is my favorite beer in the world.
I've never heard of Yingling.
Look at my hat.
I see it, but I never knew what it meant. Nor did I care enough to ask, but you love it. You literally drink it all the time.
I can't drink it all the time because it doesn't travel west of the Mississippi. It's strictly an East Coast beer.
Oh, but it comes out of Philly, so that's your.
It's Pottstown, which is just a little outside of Philly, near Allentown, Pennsylvania. But it's a huge beer in Philly, and I always drink it when I'm home. And it's just one of my favorite beers in the world. And they were just named the best-selling craft beer in the nation this week.
Nobody cares.
And I couldn't be more excited for everybody there at Yingling.
Hold up your beers if you're drinking.
And they beat Samuel Adams. So suck it, Boston! Woo! Suck it! I'm not still grumpy about that Super Bowl loss at all.
No, not a bit.
Give him the breathalyzer!
That's what I'm saying.
Eagle fan holding a grudge. Who could see that coming? Not me. All right, Jim. Easy. Anyway, big ups to Yingling out of Pottsville.
Big ups.
Out of Pottsville.
That's right.
Pottsville represent!
What does Yingling mean?
Yingling's the name of the brewer that moved from Germany back in the 1800s and started the Yingling Brewery there in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. It is America's oldest brewery.
I don't like your tone.
Ellie, how could you not recognize the name Yingling as being
as
a traditional German name?
Yingling. Yingling.
Open up a blog.
Open up a blog indeed. I'm just so thrilled.
You're too thrilled.
Yingling never gets any national attention.
Who cares?
I care. This is my little corner of the world. You people, you're so mean to me.
Oh.
Is anybody buying this polished turd?
A lot of people are.
You know, they're making a remake of The Magnificent Seven. Have you ever seen The Magnificent Seven?
You know my answer to that.
I know. I'm sorry, Kevin.
I have not.
I should have started looking around other parts of the room when I ask these questions.
I have not.
It's one of the classic all-time great westerns. And it was done back in 1960. It was actually a remake of The Seven Samurai by Kurosawa. I'm sure you've probably studied in film school.
I did, yeah.
It was Steve McQueen and Charles Bronson and a great bunch of actors. James Coburn. Well, they're remaking it with Denzel Washington in the lead. And they keep adding great actor after great actor to this cast. Chris Pratt has signed on.
Love him.
Ethan Hawke. And now they've just added Luke Grimes, who played Christian Grey's brother, Elliot, in the 50 Shades of Grey movie. He was also Mark Lee, the other Navy SEAL in American Sniper, if you saw that film. He is in talks to join the cast as well. So I'm very excited about this remake. I think it's going to be really cool if you're a movie fan.
Sort of scary to remake something that's that successful, but...
It is, but it's 1960. It was so long ago, and it is sort of a lost genre. I mean, I'm all for anything that brings the Western back because you don't see many Westerns anymore. So if this is a success, then maybe we'll see some new Westerns. But I'm all for it, and I hope they do well. Speaking of remakes, did you know they're making not one but two live-action Jungle Book movies? Do we need two live-action Jungle Book
this
movies?
This seems to happen a lot.
And unnecessarily, almost always.
All of a sudden, somebody's making one, then somebody else goes, hey, wait, we're making that. I don't know how that happens.
If I was me, I'd say, oh, you're making that? Okay, I'll be over here doing something else then.
Something else.
I'm making the Yingling story. That's my next movie. Of course.
Is it a battle then to come out first? Like, is that the most important thing?
Yes, I think so. Because invariably, whoever gets released first usually does better at the box office. But it's weird. One of the films is being done by Disney, and it's being directed by Jon Favreau. And it's going to be a live-action remake of their animated musical, which was hugely successful. And it's got the voices like Scarlett Johansson and Bill Murray and Idris Elba.
All right.
And then they're doing sort of a gritty version based on the actual book by Rudyard Kipling. And Andy Serkis will be directing that one.
Wait, Disney's doing both?
Benedict Cumberbatch, Christian Bale, and Cate Blanchett doing the voices in that one. No, one is Disney. They're doing the remake of the animated musical one with all the music. And this one is being based on the book by Rudyard Kipling.
Got it.
The source material.
They both sound pretty good.
They do. But it's just odd, I always think, when two remakes of the same product come out at the same time. This happened with Snow White, too. There were two competing Snow White movies at the same time. One with Grumpy, not the dwarf, the actress. Kirsten...
Stewart.
Kristen Stewart. Kristen Stewart. And then the other one with Lily Collins playing Snow. So. Well, guys, wait. See who wins. Today's celebrity birthdays. Bethany Joy Lenz is 34 years old today. You may remember her from One Tree Hill.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, we do.
Michael Fassbender, 38 years old. Magneto, of course, amongst other roles. Adam Rodriguez is 40 years old. Rosalind Sanchez turns 42. Yeah, we did a little research, and
We were remiss.
Clark Gregg. Come on, how great is Clark Gregg?
He's the best.
He's the best. He's one of the best guys, besides being a great actor, just one of the best guys we know. 53 years old today, and actor Christopher Maloney is 54. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
106.7 K-Rock is K-R-O-Q. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. It is 8 minutes after 8 o'clock.
Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Andy Summers from The Police. In the next room, we'll be bringing him in a minute to talk about his fascinating new documentary about that band. First, though, Thursday means we catch up with our friend Jim Rome. You hear him every weekday morning from 9 to noon on The Beast, AM 980, and across this great land of ours, also The Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Network every afternoon at 3, and Jim Rome on Showtime, which just came back with a new episode last night. Mr. Rome, how are you, sir?
Fellas and Allie, good morning. What's up?
Good morning, Jim.
Well, Allie was very concerned when she came in because she watched you on Showtime last night, and she's worried that you're trying to kill one of her favorite players in the NFL. You had quite the party going on with the Gronk last night.
Yeah, like I could kill Gronk. Like you could hit Gronk with a truck and it would only anger him. Gronk is a caveman. Gronk is so awesome. He is so enormous and so big, but until you actually get next to the guy, you cannot believe how big this guy is. So no, Al, you've got nothing to worry about. You cannot hurt Gronk.
Is he more fun or more crazy? Or can you even tell?
He's both. I mean, he lives the motto, yo soy fiesta. I mean, I lived out every NFL fan's fantasy. I got to sit down with the Gronk, and he did live up to all the hype. I mean, that interview was as good as it gets. Lots of ladies, twerking, screaming, swearing. He told me the one celebrity he wants to get with. He broke down Chunky versus Creamy Peanut Butter. He reiterated he'd rather have a concussion than a knee injury. And lots of four-letter bombs. He was awesome. The only thing that didn't happen, I couldn't work my way onto that party bus. That's what I'm trying to get. Take it onto the Gronk party bus.
Here's my concern, and yes. I tweeted Jim about it. He talked about the party bus, and he said sometimes he's so busy dancing that they go around a sharp turn, and he flies into a wall,
or
he flies into a lady. We need to get him with seatbelts, maybe some sort of protective covering. And Jim
Bubble
was
wrap.
Like, oh, yeah, this is amazing. Let's do this. No. Protect Gronk.
Allie, I'll say it again. That party bus could run him over and drag him 100 feet, and he wouldn't even know it. You cannot. The guy is indestructible. You cannot hurt Gronk. Do not sweat Gronk. He's fine.
And it's bizarre in a league and in a sport where they're all studs. For this guy to be like that is just to stand out like he does is just amazing.
You know what the best thing is, guys? He knows it. He gets it. And even though he kind of goes in that Patriot way where he won't say anything he's not supposed to say, this guy knows he's the Gronk. He knows Yo Soy Fiesta.
Yeah.
He's out there in the offseason. He's living it up. It's so cool to see a guy just do what he wants to do because he'll get his work in, but this guy's going to get down and he's going to party. I think it's nice to see.
We're talking about the Jim Rome on Showtime show, which will air several times throughout the rest of the month if you want to check it out and see that interview and the whole episode. Speaking of guys who do what they want to do, we're all big fans of Conor McGregor. We just had him here on the Kevin and Bean show a couple of weeks ago. He was making the international world tour to promote the upcoming UFC fight against Jose Aldo. You saw something the other night on TV, Jim, that fascinated you about Mr. McGregor. What happened?
I'm so glad you guys talked to him. This guy is absolutely amazing. It's gotten to the point where his press conferences are better than most MMAers' fights.
Yeah,
I mean,
true.
His interviews ought to be on pay-per-view. So what happened was he and Aldo got together, and it got pretty dicey when he went over and he snatched Aldo's championship belt from him. And I think, guys, we all know there's certain universal reasons to go. For instance, somebody spits in your face, you go.
Right.
Somebody insults your lady, you go. Somebody says something derogatory about your race or religion, you go. And somebody rips your championship belt from you, you riot. And I thought there was going to be one. Big ups to Dana White for keeping them apart Jerry Springer style. If Springer was sandwiched by two world-class fighters instead of dudes who cheat with their wives' sisters. I don't know if McGregor can beat Aldo, but I'm telling you, this guy is like my favorite fighter maybe ever, and I cannot wait to see that fight. I've never seen a pressure go down like that. It was awesome.
It was in Dublin, too, and the people were going so crazy. I mean, we have a clip of it, but you can't hear a thing because they're just insane. They love him so much.
But you know what else, though? You close your eyes, you can imagine what was going down.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's a long history in boxing and now in the UFC of trash talkers. But what I hate is when you're a trash talker like a Chael Sonnen or something like that and then you lose. The beautiful thing about Conor McGregor is no matter how big he talks, so far at least, he's able to back that up when he gets into the octagon. And that's what makes it such a fun ride, right. I think.
I see you working. I'm a Chael Sonnen guy. I'm Team Sonnen. I think that he's talked a lot of junk, but understand that he talks better junk than anybody ever. And although he didn't always win, he at least was competitive and it was compelling. But you're right. This guy's game might be as good as his mouth, and nobody can run the kind of junk that Conor McGregor does. He backs it up. I mean, I have never looked forward to a fight as much as that one. The problem is, you see this presser, and you're like, yeah, Saturday, let's get it on. The fight's not till July.
Yeah,
what are we supposed to do until July?
Yeah, that's the worst.
What is that?
We are talking to Jim Rome as we do
when you guys talked to him, how was he?
Oh, he's great. I mean, we've talked to him on the phone a couple times before, but this time we had him come in, and he was just fascinating. And, Allie, you thought he smelled good, too, if I remember correctly.
He smelled so delightful. I swear it was unlike anything I've ever smelled, like a clean yet strong.
Okay, all right.
Need a minute.
We just We just talked about how Conor McGregor smells.
That he did.
Great.
All right, in our remaining moments here.
I said...
It's on you,
you guys,
Jim.
Really quick. Yeah, I asked how he was, not how he smelled.
Yep. Allie. That's how I
you
took
opened
it.
The door, Jim.
I heard smell.
It's on you.
In our,
please do not answer questions that are not asked.
There is a there's a college basketball tournament going on that some people are interested in. How are you feeling about this weekend, and will the improbable undefeated season come to an end for the Kentucky Wildcats?
I think it's not going to. I like Kentucky for all the reasons, and for weeks now I've been saying I think they're going to run the table, so I'm going to ride and die with these guys. They're just too good. They're too deep. They're too athletic. You know, I can give you all the basketball mumbo-jumbo. They're the best team left in the field, and they should win. But Wisconsin, there's a lot to like about them. They're tall. They're long. They can shoot the hell out of it. They're looking for revenge. I'm going to ride with Kentucky, but Wisconsin can't beat them. On the other side, you've got Michigan State and Duke. I think Duke's got too much for Michigan State. And when it's all said and done, I'm going to take Kentucky to finish this thing off. 40-0, they'll beat Duke for the title.
Well, I'll tell you, right. Monday night is the championship, but these two fights on Saturday, games on Saturday are always fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great basketball. So I'm looking forward to that.
And I bet they smell great, too.
I bet they smell really good.
Nobody asked you, Jim, about their smell.
You can hear way more.
You would have gone there, though, Allie. Don't tell me you wouldn't have gone
show
there.
Starting at 9 o'clock this morning through noon, like he do every weekday on the Beast 980. He joins us every Thursday here on the Kevin Mead Show. Jim, have a great week, man. Thanks for the time.
You do too, tremendous. See ya.
I never feel worse about us, Kevin, than I do when we have a guest like this man in front of us right now. He is a Grammy Award winner, an inductee into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He is an accomplished photographer, author, and now documentarian. The new film is called Can't Stand Losing You, Surviving the Police. He is Andy Summers, and he joins us here on the Kevin Mead Show on K-Rock. Hey, Mr. Summers, how are you, sir?
It's early.
It's early, so sure.
Can I get back to you at about midday about that?
We do apologize for the hour at which our show is on. It's not ideal for most people, especially in your line of work.
I'll try and speak English, yeah.
So you wrote a book that was very successful, your best-selling memoir called One Train Later, and then you couldn't be done with the story then. You said, hey, wait a minute, this has to be a movie. Tell me about that.
Well, it was sort of along those. Well, I don't know. I was. Here's the thing. I had the book. I also had this rather large body of photography, which I'd shot from like day one practically through the police. And then I saw a film called The Kid Stays in the Picture, which was about the film. The film's about the life of Robert Evans, the Paramount film producer. But the thing is, the film was done with just still photographs and Robert Evans' voiceover. And somewhere in there, it occurred to me that I had the same stuff, the whole book and all the photography. And wouldn't it be nice to do that?
Were you taking photos your whole life? Was it something you're passionate about?
Well, you know, like I was probably like up to a certain point, like everyone else, had a camera, took pictures. And then it was really early days of the police in New York, actually. I went, you know what, I'm going to start taking this seriously. And I got a really nice camera. And I started to go for it. It was like, you will do this. But actually, seemed to have a natural aptitude for it and became obsessed with it.
The pictures are stunning, and it actually makes the documentary that much better. But the thing I loved about it, which I didn't know much about, was your whole story leading up to the police, then getting married, and then after the police. So it's really a look at you, and then this band called The Police, Jim.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the objective of the book was like, okay, I'm this musician, I'm this guitarist, and really the central message in the book is sort of keep the faith. Mm-hmm. Whatever happens, you will be playing this instrument, and it's the one thing that I return to all the time, the guitar. And the first half in the book is my life as a musician and all the ups and downs and the desperate times that go with that, trying to stay alive until eventually I crack it.
Let's talk about the before the police years, because I don't know how you keep going. You were in band after band. They broke up for whatever reason. I mean, how old were you when you joined the police?
About 30.
30?
Yeah.
And you said that was death for a musician.
I thought it was over, yeah. And it was all rather peculiar because I'd been in L.A., I'd been to college, I'd studied guitar. I'd gotten really very internal with music, really, you know, trying to be a very serious musician. The odd thing about the police story is I was back in London, and I was actually doing very well in the guitar ranks of London. I was going quickly. And then I sort of took this absolute left turn and joined an unknown punk band with no future whatsoever.
They weren't the police we know, obviously.
Guess what happened, though?
there are two fascinating stories of the pre-police years that for me, Andy. Yeah. One was that you, at some point when you stayed in Los Angeles after the Animals broke up and you didn't want to go back to to let it. You were a guitar teacher. That was what you were doing for a living. And for all you knew, that was what you were going to continue to do for a living for the rest of your life, is just teach people how to play guitar, right?
Well, I don't think I had real ambitions in that direction. I was surviving by doing it very minimally. I was down to about, it was really grim, about $40 a month.
Wow.
Yeah, I was going to college playing classical guitar, actually, at that period, studying music. The only way I could survive, really, was teaching guitar.
Did you enjoy teaching guitar?
Depends on the student, really. Yeah. If you've got a great student that's really into it and alive and sort of brings something to the table, it's fun.
That's
other
amazing.
Than that, it's not really for me.
And the other thing that came up, and you covered this just very briefly in the movie, and I want to hear more. Was it just a rumor that got to you that the Rolling Stones were considering putting you in the band, or was there at any point actually an audition?
No, there wasn't. We never got to that stage. It was a weird one. It was in the Melody Maker. It was a big thing about, who was it who left? Oh, Mick Taylor. And mm-hmm. they had to replace him, and so I was put on this shortlist. But I
in the paper, you saw that in the paper.
Oh, it was in the paper.
I was like, I'm up for that job.
Yeah, they put my photograph in front of everybody else's.
So Ron Wood obviously got the job, and is still with the Stones to these days. Do you ever wonder? Do you ever think about how you may never have been a part of the Police had the audition gone one step further and you'd gotten the job? You would still be probably with the Rolling Stones today, and going out on tour this summer.
That's really it. It's interesting, but I think destiny had me lined up for another great band. Hello.
Yeah. Well.
And I remember Mick Jagger turning up at, I think it was Hartford, Connecticut, and standing and watching the show and coming to our dressing room. He was very sweet, actually, but he was definitely checking us out.
You know? All right. I have one last question about Before the Police, and then we'll get into life with the Police.
Okay.
And that is, there was a point in time when you were on stage in London, and it was accepted and a cool thing to do for the audience to spit on you.
Yeah.
That is disgusting.
Oh, so disgusting. Yeah, I think, it was definitely
was
going
it
on.
Was a couple of people?
Everyone.
Everyone was spitting.
No, it was
that's
nuts.
A nightmare.
That's when you question your career path.
Right.
Really.
I'm playing the guitar. I don't need to be spit on.
Yeah, my hands were covered in slime. It was not nice, man. I'm not telling you.
Was this because the Sex Pistols had just come along and made everything gross?
Kind of. It was that era. It was hardcore punk. And I mean, you had to be in London, but I mean, that was a scene that was only punk. You know, if you weren't punk, you were out of the business. And, gobbing was part of the deal for
gobbing.
A while. Yeah, gobbing, they call it. Yeah.
You Not must nice. Have been so happy to get out of the van. I mean, your first tour of the United States is legendary. I never had seen it in a movie until yours, Can't Stand Losing You, Surviving the Police. Andy Summers, our guest on the Kevin Amin Show. But that was – you guys were touring up and down the country, especially the East Coast, in a van playing for – how small were the crowds on that first tour, Andy?
We did this little East Coast tour as the last-ditch attempt to save the band, because we were just about finished in the UK. No one wanted us. And we started at CBGB's with probably, 15, 20 people.
That's it.
That went down a storm, and just was so excited to be there at CBGB's, which, by the way, was an absolutely filthy hole.
but didn't spit on you.
No, but it was the mecca of punk. And then we did this little three-week tour, which ended up in Boston at the Rats Keller. Yeah, which was very important for us. We completely sold it out for four nights. And one of the reasons was that on WBCN with a DJ called Oedipus was playing the song in Roxanne in heavy rotation. So everyone was very excited to see us. And, we were sort of an unknown punk band, but that put us on the map. And A&M in America signed us on the strength of those shows.
It is hard to imagine now, because we've all grown up with Roxanne, and it's, of course, a classic rock staple now. But there was a time where that was too weird to play on the radio, and there were very few radio stations at the beginning. K-Rock, of course, where you are today, would have been one of them that would have played Roxanne very, very early for the Police, because we were playing all the imports and whatnot back then.
Yeah.
But that was where it all turned around for the Police. The documentary is called Can't Stand Losing You, Surviving the Police. Andy Summers is in studio with us here on the Kevin Bean Show. It opens up in theaters tomorrow at the Lemley's Royal in West L.A., at the Lemley's Playhouse 7 in Pasadena. It's also at the AMC Rolling Hills in the Lemley NoHo. More with our guest, Andy Summers, right after this on K-Rock. Andy Summers in studio with us here on the Kevin Bean Show. The documentary is called Can't Stand Losing You, Surviving the Police, opening up in select Southern California theaters everywhere tomorrow, based on the best-selling memoir that Andy also wrote called One Train Later. Andy, I know we're not going to have as much time as I would like, so let me just put this out there. Being in the world's biggest rock band is not all sunshine and daisies and rainbows, right?
No.
A lot of downsides to being that successful, that famous, that popular. True?
Well, you need to carry the metaphorical umbrella. at all times.
And what's the biggest problem? Shield. Being away from home, is that the hardest, the biggest hardship of that lifestyle?
What's the biggest hardship? It is. Yeah, of course. Classically, it takes its toll on marriage. All three of us were divorced along the way. But at the same time, it's a hard one because it's an incredible blast and incredibly exciting because the sort of nonstop adrenaline rush of doing all this stuff. But of course, it's you become sort of an automaton that just does this thing, and all the things that you might have cherished with your previous inner life go out the window.
Well, at what point in the band's career, the Police, did it become, okay, now we need to start planning, take this seriously, business model, how we look, all of that stuff? Because you didn't care about that for
not the beginning.
Years.
I think at the beginning we were just hoping that we could, get enough gigs to even survive or be a decent band. But then it sort of went way past that, obviously. I think certainly by the second album we were going, we're really hot. We better take this seriously.
Right.
We got something here. Yeah.
And then is that when the three of you start? I mean, really, you sort of butt heads.
Always butted heads, but
does that intensify it?
It's a sort of subtle separating out as it gets really mega. The one thing I always said, look, you can't have a great rock band, really, without a lot of very sparky chemistry. And, there are no mellow guys in our band. Everyone wants to be the leader. And that's the way it is. Everyone's fighting for the front position. But out of that, you get a really tough thing.
Yeah, you show in the movie that you're at by the Synchronicity Tour, you're arriving at the stadium in separate limousines, and you're basically only seeing each other on stage. Even when you're recording that album, you're all in different rooms, different parts of the studio. It's almost like you can't stand to be in the same room with one another, won't be unless it's on stage.
Yeah, it does sort of appear like that. I mean, by the time 4 and 5 albums turned up, it was getting more difficult. But we actually separated out, which is weird, but really for sound purposes.
Oh, you did it for sound purposes, not because you were butting.
Yeah, that's what
too
we
much.
Tell people about Kevin and Bebe in different states.
Seattle's pushing it a bit. We didn't get as far as separate cities, but we could have done it.
Andy, let me ask you this: because the thing about documentaries is it's all in the editing, and I mean no disrespect in this question, but Sting really comes off as kind of a dick in this movie. Is that accurate? Are we just seeing a portion of the relationship with him, or was that pretty representative?
Yeah, I think it's three dicks in one room.
But I mean, musically, he seems to really—he talks down to the other two members of the band all the time and makes them change things all the time. Is what it looks like in the movie.
Yeah, I think what you're saying. Yeah, it's very sensitive and sort of cringing, but it's honest. You're seeing the sort of the nitty gritty of the tension of trying to put something together that's very good.
And the bastard's good looking to add to the mix, right?
Oh. Yeah.
I mean, it's just got to be a difficult thing. And then did he write most of the songs? Were you battling over which songs to put on the album and all that?
Well, it was always a fight.
Yeah.
It was always a fight. And I have to say, what sold the Police musically on record and so many millions of records was the sound of the three of us playing more than anything else. Mm-hmm. It's that chemistry. It's not one guy with a backing group, it's three leaders fighting it out and getting to that sound that's that sort of tight compromise. That's the sound of the Police. Very spare, but really cuts through.
So without that friction, you don't ever get to the
place. I don't think so. You can't have even one mellow guy, really. And three mellow guys would be just like, might as well eat bananas.
All right. Andy Summers here on the Kevin Beebe Show.
I didn't think I would hear you might as well eat bananas in this interview.
Favorite part of today.
Sorry.
From the Police, talking about the film in theaters tomorrow called Can't Stand Losing You. You had to do a million radio interviews, and I know you didn't enjoy them that much. They got to be pretty repetitive. But it also seems like the media was playing a part, almost in delighting in the tension and trying to break you guys up with their line of questioning. What do you suppose that was about?
Yeah, we very early on got tarred with this image. And I feel even this time around I have to sort of defend it and say, look, they're my brothers. We all love one another. And within the last week I've heard – in fact, last night I heard from Stuart and I heard from Sting about a week ago, being very supportive about, this current project going out with the movie. So beneath that very, rather easily applied media thing that they put on us, you know, about, oh, you guys hate each other. Actually, we don't, you know, just a little bit.
How did the Global Reunion Tour happen after being apart for 20 years? How did you guys finally mend the fences enough to go, hey, let's take it around the world one more time?
Well, you know, Of course, that whole intervening period, the first question in any interview is, when are you guys going to get back together? Not like, you know, always. No matter how, you know, I could have... The elephant was getting larger and larger in the room until we could barely couldn't breathe. But basically, it all happened in 2006, over the year. All three of us met at the Sundance Film Festival in January of that year, had a picture taken together, which went around the world in about 30 seconds flat. And they, and like, in the English tabloids, they're back! We weren't. We just happened to meet, yeah. You know. And then as over the year, I had dinner with Sting a few times in L.A. Then we ended up in New York, and I was promoting the book, actually, One Train Later. I was at Barnes & Noble downtown. Sting had his Loot album out, and he was at Barnes & Noble uptown.
Okay.
And wow. We were laughing. We got on the phone, and we were sort of laughing. All right, so this is what happened. Now we're both at Barnes & Noble. What happened? You know?
We used to be a rock band.
Yeah. And then we met again in London not long after that and, you know, had a sort of good time hanging out. And basically, you know, I got the call a few days later. That was sort of how it went down. You could sort of feel it coming over that year, 2006. And it was probably like December 2006. Right, we're going for it. And 2007, off we went.
What was the first time you stepped out on stage again like? Was it a little nerve-wracking or was it just like old times?
Yeah, no, it's a mix. It is nerve-wracking. I go... Because it's a very loaded moment. Everybody, you know, the expectation was so high. And what we did was we played to about 19,000 in Vancouver. I think it was set up as a sort of fan club thing, like a tryout. Let's see if we can do this. We rehearsed in Vancouver for 3 weeks and did the show. And immediately it was like, oh, yeah, we know how to do this. And we were back.
You know, like that's cool. How big was that tour? It ended up being one of the biggest tours of all time, right?
It was at that time. I don't know if it's surpassed. I mean, I think clearly it would have been the biggest tour of all time if we just kept going longer. The only reason it wasn't actually technically number one was because the Stones went out for 4.5 years. Well, that's hard
to
beat.
Your other band.
But, you know, we outsold them everywhere we went, you know, by 50,000 a night. You know.
So
the Stones are going to be playing for another 20 years.
I think so.
They'll be coming out in little wooden boxes eventually.
Maybe.
They'll have a gig. Yeah. So when the tour was finally over, you felt like, well, now we've actually said goodbye. That was a farewell because the first time it didn't feel like a farewell. Now it feels like a farewell. Were you all comfortable? Did you do a thing like some bands do where they go, well, that's it. Now we're really done. We're just never going to do this again. That's a cherry on top. We're done. Or did you still leave the door open and who knows, maybe you'll do it again?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we also, oh, that's it. You know, and we were on this show with Elvis Costello. And Sting saying, I'm never going to step in the same river twice, and Stuart trying to fire us all. It was all sort of rubbish, basically, because it ain't over. Sorry. You know, and I was using the word closure. Oh, I need closure on the police. No, not really. Who wants that word? I don't want to close anything. I think whole game has changed. The whole game has changed. Look, the Stones are out. Van Halen went out, smacked themselves in the nose with a microphone.
Yeah, he did break his nose.
Good old day.
That did happen.
Rock and roll. Good on him. You know, but I should try that, actually. In fact, I may do it before I leave
this room.
I don't
think that's a good idea. What's the legacy of the police? How do you think people think of the police in 2015, Andy?
Well, I think we have a very great legacy, actually. We had some... Well, you know, look, we had incredible success. I think we added a lot to the rock lexicon, if you like, you know, with the songs and the way we played. I think it really shook things up, which was, you know, an accomplishment because we didn't really want to sound like anything else. Luckily, the three of us had the particular talents and chemistry that actually made for that. But still, we, you know, there was some of it is unconscious, but a lot of it is very conscious, trying to get across that way and sustaining it for as long as we did. I think we have a, you know, I like all the stuff we did. So,
well, congratulations on all of your success, with and without the police, and with a guitar and with a camera too. Because as Ali said, your photographs are just amazing, just amazing. The documentary is called "Can't Stand Losing You: Surviving the Police." It's showing in several theaters in Southern California starting tomorrow, including the Lemley NoHo, AMC Rolling Hills, Lemley's Royal in West LA. Chile and Lemley's Playhouse 7 in Pasadena. And it's based on the book, which now I'm going to go out and read because I'm sure there's a lot of stuff in the book that's not in the movie called One Train Later by Andy Summers. Andy, thanks so much for coming in, man. We really, really enjoyed it.
Great to be here. Thank you.
I love stuff like this.
Well, 1 minute we're talking to Andy Summers, guitarist for the Police. And right. Then the next minute our producer Dave comes in and he goes, "Hey guys, Ludacris is here. You guys want him to stop by?" And we're like, "Hell yeah, we want him to stop by."
What kind of question is that?
So Ludacris is here.
Yeah,
on the
man.
Show on K-Rock. How are you, Luda?
I'm good, man. I'm humbled at how popular I am sometimes.
You're very popular, especially this week with a brand new album that just came out on Tuesday called Ludaversal and a brand new film that we've all been waiting for in theaters everywhere tomorrow, including IMAX, by the way, called Furious 7. Now, was this on purpose that you dropped the album the same week as the movie was coming out, figuring you were going to be out doing promotion anyway? Why not hit them both?
It kind of, exactly. I definitely did, man. And it actually just worked out that way also. So, you know, like the album was done. We had finished with all the clearances and it just so happened to be the same time that they were releasing the movie. So what better way to promote the movie than to also say I have an album, man. And I just want to say to you guys, man, people always ask me what they would be surprised about Ludacris that they don't know. And I love the format of this station and the music that you guys play.
You
know, I love different genres of music, and I'm a music lover. It's just because somebody does rap music doesn't mean that's all they listen to. I know some people think that, and that's a stereotype. But, like, I would say that Red Hot Chili Peppers is one of my favorite bands, and Scar Tissue, one of my favorite songs,
hey, look,
Mumford & Sons, and all that good stuff, man.
I got to tell you, when we started, it was very different. When we started, there was a lot of people that would say, you guys talk about this, you talk to only this type of artist, and now it just doesn't matter anymore.
Exactly, because people appreciate music, which brings me to my next point. People who only listen to the music on this station, buy the Ludacris album on iTunes. I guarantee you, you're going to love, like, if you never even listen to rap music, or you don't even have too much rap in your iPod or whatever, or your phone, try this out, and I guarantee you won't be disappointed. It's called Ludaversal, man.
Let me ask you this question, Ludacris, and this comes up from time to time, particularly when we have rappers on.
Yeah.
Why is it so hard to have a significant, long-running rap career where the quality maintains? Very few rappers are able to come out strong and then still be strong 15 years later. It seems to be such a short period of time that people are down with it. You know
what
I mean?
That is such a great question, because we may be able to learn something from each other today, because rappers think the same thing about rock and roll artists. Unless, you know, you have those chosen few that last the ages, but we're always like, these rock and roll and different genres, they only have one or two albums in them, and then they go, and then they just tour for the rest of their lives.
So it's a universal problem of staying relevant and staying good.
But to answer your question, I think that, you know, this is a great answer for your question. They call it the music business for a reason. So it's 90% business and 10% music, and I think a lot of the people don't understand that, and a lot of these rappers don't have their business taken care of right. So it may not be necessarily that they're making the wrong music, they just have completely messed their contracts up, and then it starts getting to their head, and then from there it just all goes downhill, and you know, people are taking their money and all that type stuff.
How did you learn the business side of this,
man? I was reading books, like one was called Everything You Need to Know About the Music Industry.
Really?
Before I got signed. So I knew it was all about the business, and I think that's part of the reason of why I have longevity and consistency.
So you bought Rappers for Dummies and then just hit the road.
Exactly. That's exactly what I did, man, because the best way to infiltrate the system is to pretty much at least understand all of the jobs that are around you and surrounding what it is that you're doing. So you have to be strategic and you have to be very intelligent about that, man.
I would pay for seminars. Ludacris.
Same.
Ludacris TED Talk. That's what you need.
Yeah. Same. Amazing.
There you have it, man. You got to love it, man. You got to have your business taken care of.
The new album is called Ludaversal. It's out this week, as we mentioned. You have done a lot of acting over the last 15 years. And lots of varied projects. You always come back to Fast and Furious. Why do you not get tired of making these movies?
Man, you know why? Because every time I read the script, I'm sitting here trying to figure out how in the hell are we going to top what we just did. And as long as my character is evolving and progressing and the script seems to be getting crazier and crazier with these ludicrous stunts, no pun intended, then I'm all down for it, man. And that's pretty much the answer to your question.
And you're kind of the comic relief, which is fun to play in the films.
Yeah.
But these stunts, I mean, at some point they can't top it. You can't. I mean, when you're starting to have an airplanes dropping cars and cars going out of skyscrapers, at some point there's nowhere bigger to go.
Right. But that's what I was saying on the last one. Yeah. And then we're reading the script and seeing a car jump from one building to the next, and you know, seeing skydiving out of a plane in cars. I'm just like, how in the hell are we gonna make this happen? But that's my point. It just keeps getting crazier and crazier.
But does that scare you a little bit?
Hell yeah.
It starts to sound cartoonish. Oh, yeah, we're going to jump out of a skyscraper with a car.
It does, but every time I go to the movie theater and I sneak in, you start realizing that even as crazy as these stunts are, this is what people go to the movie theaters to see. They want to see it. That's what it is.
If it's done well, no question.
It's escapism. It's therapy. That's exactly what people want that theatrical experience for, because it gives you that blood rush, you know?
I have a friend that saw it last night.
Yeah.
And he posted on Instagram before he went in, I haven't seen the previous ones. Can't wait to see it. And his Instagram lit up. He was being verbally berated by people. And then he came out of the movie, posted again, and said, that was the best ever. I'm going to go home and just binge watch. But it's one of those movies that you don't have to have all the backstories. It's just going to blow your mind.
It is. And you know what's crazy is that, you know, I came up in the era where these Star Trek and Star Wars fans were all down the corner, you know, when this movie come out. And now Fast and Furious is exactly that. Tonight, for this midnight screening, I guarantee you on the news, and you guys will be reporting tomorrow about some craziness that has happened
tonight. Sure we will.
You know, so
are you going someplace tonight?
I am, man. You know, I definitely want to go sneak into some theaters, because that's the joy of being an actor in great movies, is when you get to sneak in and get the real reaction from audiences.
Which one?
Which
that's
one?
Not,
which one are you going
not
to?
Sneaking. If he tells you, it's not.
Yeah, sneaking to movie theaters. That's
I'm sure
the point,
you have you have seen the reviews, and every critic is saying this is the best in the franchise by far. Which, you know, it's tough to get good reviews for an action film.
It 100%.
People who write
tough.
Those things seem to be predisposed to just discount those movies as being no good. But yours is hitting all the buttons here.
I agree. You know what it is? They used to trash Fast and Furious, and are we just being, you know, we're being very, very honest here. And the critics used to trash it. However, once you get to 5 and 6 and 7, and the movies keep making more and more money, and these fans become more and more loyal to it, and it's almost like you were just saying, the guy that, you know, the fans were berating him because he said he hadn't seen the other ones. It almost puts the pressure on critics themselves, because at a certain point you start looking like just a hater. You know what I mean? So I think that it's a good thing that we continue to build and progress. And the last one did like $800 million, so we're feeling like we're going to break $1 billion on this one. And because of the Paul Walker situation, and this is leaving his, you know, this is his legacy, and this is his last movie. And the way that it is done, I don't want to give the movie away, but in terms of how we creatively end this movie is the best possible way that can honor him and pay homage to him.
Of course, depressing but scary moment as to what to do, how to do it.
It was extremely scary, because this movie almost didn't see the light of day. And, you know, he was about 80% done with the parts in his movie before his untimely death. And they shut down production for 4 to 5 months. Wow. And everybody was in the mourning process. And we didn't even know we were going to get called back. We thought it was a done deal.
So that just wasn't going to happen.
Exactly. So, you know, once we did get the call back, we realized and we read exactly what it was that they were trying to do. And, man, we were all for it, because, you know, with him finishing 80%, we all were like, he definitely would have wanted us to finish this. And just as long as the integrity is kept and everything is right. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, I will tell you, as sad as that was for all of us, as, you know, as movie fans and also just as human beings, to see somebody, you know, lose somebody that young, the cast members in this film, it wasn't just like this was a guy you worked with at the office. I mean, you guys were legitimate friends, and I know how hard it was for you. And, of course, we all know how hard it was for Michelle and for Jordana and everybody. And we've heard them talk so much about what a loss it is in their lives to have him gone.
It really is, man. And what you just said is one of the most important things of why I feel like this franchise is so popular and so successful. Because any other movies that I've been on, you know, when the camera and everybody else cut, people go their separate ways. They go to their separate trailers. They go to their separate homes. We literally, like, not only individually, but as a family. Like, we really are family. We go hang out with each other. Our kids hang out with each other. I'll go over Vin's house sometimes, and sometimes I go over Tyrese's house, and sometimes it's the three of us, and I go hang with Michelle Rodriguez. And you would be surprised at how much each individual hangs with each other. Mm-hmm. Off that's camera.
That
and
seems
that's what it
super
is.
Rare.
And that's what I'm telling
seems
you.
Seems super rare.
Absolutely.
We knew we were going to have Andy Summers from the Police. We didn't know we were going to have Ludacris today.
Amazing.
And it's a great, great surprise. Man, tell us about your new album.
Man, the new album, Ludiversal, this is my 8th studio album. So like you said, man, I'm glad to be one of the rappers that are in that category of put the elite amount of members that can put out that many. But for anybody that loves or has heard any Ludacris song ever in your life, this is something that you definitely want to check out because it is some of my greatest work, my most vulnerable time. I'm spilling my heart out on these songs. So,
more than any other time?
Yeah, man.
Any other album?
Absolutely, because it's just a maturity thing. And before, I wasn't comfortable talking about certain subjects, but now it's like I'm opening my personal life. So with music, especially rap music, it is it's kind of like a narrative, and it has to be educational and teach you about what's going on in the world and more money, more problems. You know, if you just want to get a perspective on life and it's very interesting, then definitely check out this Ludiversal album, man.
And check out Furious 7 in theaters everywhere tomorrow. Ludacris, yeah. You're the man.
Thank
get it
you
done.
Guys,
thanks
man.
So much for
Thank
stopping
you.
By. We really enjoyed it.
Now I got to come back sometime,
All
man.
Right,
I enjoy it.
This is a crazy day. I got to be honest. It's a crazy
it
day.
It is crazy. We were talking with Andy Summers from The Police all about his new documentary. Then Ludacris stopped by. We're talking about his new record, talking about Fast and Furious 7. And now on my checklist, we're talking about Butt Death with Dr. Drew Pinsky. Is that what's up next?
Yeah.
Well, it's mostly that when you think of Ludacris, you think of me.
That's true.
That's right. You guys should be on the radio back to back.
Now here I am. See?
It's Luda and Drew. Same guy. You are the same guy.
Lou Drew.
Hey, Dr. Drew.
Sorry. Who just hung up or got disconnected.
Oh, we lost him?
Yeah.
What was that about?
Don't know.
Was it my joke?
It was probably your joke.
I would have hung up.
It was probably
Allie.
The phone system said, F you, Allie McKay.
No, he's calling back.
Dr. Drew, of course, is the host of Dr. Drew on Call on HLN, Loveline 5 nights a week here on K-Rock, and 8KABC weekday afternoons with Mike Catherwood. Drew, my question was, on Loveline, you guys have to get into the topic of rectal injuries all the time. I can't imagine this doesn't come up, right?
Well, just being around Mike Catherwood, it comes up all the time, you know.
True.
How it goes. Yeah. So, yes, indeed, in this particular case, it does catch one's eye. This is the Getty Air that was found down, dead, with undisclosed rectal injuries. Which we got to unpack what we. I spent half my day.
Don't use the word unpack.
The go problem ahead. Was packing in the first place.
Okay, we're done. Good. I go home now.
I'm just all saying. Right.
What don't we know about this, doctor?
Yeah. Well, I spent half my days these days. I'm not going to use the word I just used.
Right.
Explaining.
Yes.
What actually headlines mean, because it seems that journalists have such pathetic understanding of the human body, of biology, of things like mental health, that they just report things in very haphazard and weird ways, and it's either inaccurate, wrong, or packed with all sorts of information that I can then unpack. And in this case, there was a lot of info there that was unstated. For instance...
So we heard traumatic injury to the rectal area.
And dead. And so that means this guy bled to death in all probability. Again, just reading between, just trying to understand the headlines.
Okay.
He probably bled to death. He's also known to have been an addict. There's some stories this morning coming out about cocaine and having had an aneurysm. I don't know if I buy any of that, but it makes me think, oh, he's an addict. Well, the addicts often have liver disease. When they have liver disease, they often have something called portal hypertension, where the vessels get engorged in their esophagus and in their rectum. So they can get bleeding really easily down there. Also, their clotting system doesn't work very well. So I thought, oh, my goodness, this guy, maybe, now the question now is, was he doing this by himself, or was he doing it with somebody else? Your bets?
Yeah. So wait a second.
Because
his
ex made the call, right? And he had a restraining order against her?
What was she doing there, and what were they doing, and why the rectal injuries? So that's the part that somebody has to explain to me. But the point is, he was doing something up there with something and triggered some bleeding.
Well, we knew that. But Dr. Drew on to say he was up there doing something and something happened.
But I'm packing for you.
I'm confused, Doctor. I'm confused here by something that you said. It sounded to me like what you were suggesting is maybe he wasn't putting something up his butt, that maybe the blood was caused as a result of the problems with his liver, maybe.
No? I was just sort of thinking that the normal person can have all the fun they want up there. They're not going to bleed to death unless they're using a sharp object, like, you know, sort of a You know that Mr. Hands gentleman? That's something we discuss on Love. If you put something too large and too forcefully or too sharp, or the guy that sat on the bottle, those of you that are YouTube fans, you know, obviously those people are going to be in trouble. But the average person doesn't bleed to death from some rectal, unless somebody comes in there and goes, hey, you didn't pay your debt. This is something you see in the emergency room all the time.
It is.
Well, people come in with really bizarre things up the keister. And the comedy is when you ask them how this happened, they always have the same answer.
They slipped.
They sat on it.
Oh, they said, yeah, it was an accident.
I've heard some slips, too, but they sat on it primarily. And usually what, in fact, has happened is sort of a drug deal gone bad. It's like, hey, man, you don't pay your debt. I'm going to put a grapefruit, you know, up there. And then the guy walks in with a grapefruit up his ass.
Dr. Drew's life is so much more interesting than we thought it was.
Guys walk into the hospital with a grapefruit up their ass.
Yeah.
That's what you just said.
Yeah.
All right.
So what? I don't know how to phrase this question and be FCC friendly, but what is the attraction for people where they start putting household objects up their butt? I mean, are you just so horny, Dr. Drew, that you can't stop and rationally think, okay, that item plus my butt is going to mean bad news?
Bean, I never thought we'd have this conversation. but
Bean's been waiting his whole career to ask you that.
Phrase that way. First of all, to really get to the bottom of this, if you will.
Chuck, here we go.
You have to get Catherwood in here. He's much more interested in this stuff than I might be. But I can tell you that what happens sometimes when people are traumatized early in life, they need higher, and or if they're an opiate addict, there's another route to this. They need higher levels of arousal in order to feel sexually satisfied. They have to have these extreme experiences, and it kind of becomes even addictive in that they get tolerant to that and need more and more extreme kinds of stuff in order to feel satisfied. And this is that kind of history or that kind of phenomena sets them down that road.
Well, I will tell you, I mean, we are joking around a little bit, but this really is a tragic story. This guy was only in his 40s, by the way, and as you mentioned, had some reported problems with drugs. Cops had been called to his home 31 times over the years, mostly for domestic disturbances. A lot of them were with this ex-girlfriend of his that ended up calling 911. So he clearly had a short and very troubled life.
Well, you just let's put two sort of lessons here. Now, let's put aside and get really serious here. Money doesn't solve anything. These are very wealthy people. And the one thing I noticed when I started working at a psychiatric hospital, at the time when I first started working there was sort of a high-end, you know, a lot of rich people were there, and I noticed, oh, my God, the very rich and the very poor have much more in common with each other than with the rest of us. So money is not going to solve anybody.
Does it make it worse?
Many times, mm-hmm. but it's. I think it's more about
because you hear about people that win the lottery or whatever, and that's a disaster in their life.
Yeah, and they always say it was the worst thing that happened. So let's not everybody. Let's learn that parable, learn that lesson. Number one, and then number two, the other lesson is addiction is a fatal disease. This is how it plays out. It's very complicated. People die of multiplicity of causes. It's not the usual situation that somebody just overdoses with a needle in their arm. It's complicated. It's Bobby Christina. It's this guy. It's a fatal disease. It's protean. It's cunning. It's complex. And it's a disaster. And people, if anyone's suffering from this, please get help early. Not let it unravel like this.
Dr. Drew on call on HLN tonight at 6, and he'll be with his friend Mike Catherwood on Loveline tonight at 10. Thanks for the time, Doc.
You got it, guys.
That item plus my butt is going to mean bad news.
That's true.
That's very true. Wait a second. Sure. Where that's out of context.
That's very true.
What just happened?
We found that out that. When we were talking to Dr. Drew. Yeah, you said that your whole life.
Zoom, zoom. That item plus my butt is going to mean bad news.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hey, time for the final showbiz beat here on the Kevin Bean Show for a Thursday morning. What's going on, Mr. Garman?
Sure. Busta Rhymes isn't in the wings. Sure, Coolio doesn't want to come in?
Look.
Whip up some recipes? You sure?
You were more than welcome to join us. We said, hey, Luda's in the building. Let's have him come in and be Ralph's special guest on the showbiz beat. You could have been a part of that, but you declined.
My special guest, because you know how I feel about Ludacris.
It was nice of you to give up your time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think we all like Ludacris. He's a good dude.
So make sure that, you know.
I don't think any other rappers are in the building.
Snoop's not around?
I don't think so.
I'd love to have him.
Well, that would be great. But
let's see if he's got any of that wacky tobacco that he enjoys so much.
Yes, he does.
He sure does. Hey, what's up with Avril Lavigne?
A name I haven't heard in a while.
You know why? Because
she's got the thing, right?
Severe case of Lyme disease.
Oh, no.
What,
why are you applauding Lyme disease, Bean?
Why is the crowd happy?
Sorry.
What is Lyme disease?
Last October, she was in Vegas celebrating her 30th birthday when she became so weak and tired that she had to stay in bed. Doctor said she must have been bitten by a tick. She wound up in bed for 5 months. That's why you
haven't... white people problems.
Wow. That's why you haven't seen or heard of Avril Lavigne in a while. Bedridden for 5 months.
Wow.
This Lyme disease is not to be trifled with.
What about the previous 5 years that we hadn't heard of Avril Lavigne? Was that also a tick?
Well played, Dick.
Hey, you. I don't like your boyfriend. Remember that song?
That was her?
Yeah. That was Avril Lavigne, yeah.
Was that five years ago?
It was a lot longer than that. A lot longer ago than that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
that's a shame, though. Sorry to
I was
that.
Just trying to do a story about somebody who was sick. I'm sorry. I don't know what I was thinking. Luda, would you come back in? They're not interested in anything. I just want to talk to you more Fast and Furious.
I think Luda left.
Luda!
I think he left.
Luda!
I think he left. I think Luda left. I think he's left the building. What's going to happen?
I'm just going to give away my WonderCon tickets, and we're going to call it a day. How about that?
All right.
WonderCon! WonderCon is the amazing comic book convention. It happens down there at the Anaheim Convention Center. I have got a pair of single-day passes to WonderCon. I'm telling you, it's one of my favorite events of the year. Second only, I think, maybe to the Comic-Con down in San Diego. It's just an outstanding con. It's happening on April the 3rd, which is tomorrow through Sunday, April the 5th at the Anaheim Convention Center. If you'd like to go, why don't you give me a call right now, 1-800-520-1067. First, four callers through at that phone number. We'll get a pair of passes. Single-day passes to WonderCon. So you get to pick your day and head on down there. You will enjoy it. I promise you. You can go to comic-con.org for more information or to buy your tickets in case you don't win. But I'm telling you, it's a good time.
Was it last year, Ralph, that you were a featured guest at the WonderCon?
I did do WonderCon last year. We did
Because you're a comic book writer now.
Kevin Smith and I did a panel down there where we talked to Burt Ward, TV's Robin, about the upcoming release of the DVDs and whatnot. And I did meet and greet some people because we had Batman Meets the Green Hornet out at the time. So it was a good time down there at WonderCon. I recommend it highly. Go! Go!
Now?
Not now. I got a quick email here to read from Matt Liralde. He seems like a good guy. It's a sad story, though. He said, my whole family forgot to set their alarms this morning. So we all woke up late. I subsequently missed my regular train. After getting to work late, I was hoping to redeem part of my day with a great cup of Joe. Oh, don't I know that feeling? It wasn't until I noticed that someone used the last of my own personal half and half. Because what gross individual uses that powdered crap? I agree, Matt. Those bastards, he says. Now, I'm out of creamer from my coffee. I woke up in a new Bugatti. I'm out of creamer for my coffee. I'm out of creamer for my coffee. I'm out of creamer for my coffee.
Oh, hell no.
Hell yes. Thank you, Matt, for...
Hashtag suck it.
...for contributing. As they say.
Just read it up. Word
Screw
for a second.
That.
Today's celebrity birthdays, Bethany Joy Lenz from One Tree Hill. She is 34 years old today. The amazingly talented Michael Fassbender is 38. So funny, he was known for a long time as a very serious, dramatic actor. And now he's in the franchise tentpole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mean tentpole.
Yeah. He's kind of a tentpole just on his own.
With Magneto there in the X-Men movies, he's coming back for another go-around. Adam Rodriguez is 40 years old today. Rosalind Sanchez is 42. Any relation, Dave? This is Rosalind Sanchez. Any relation?
Nope.
You got the same last name.
Don't we all?
All right, that's Dave at KRock.com right there for that racist comment.
That was fine.
Clark Gregg, one of our favorites around here. You know him as Agent Coulson, of course, from the Marvel Universe. He is 53. Christopher Maloney turns 54. Christopher Maloney is 54. Clark Gregg is 53. What are these guys doing? What are they drinking? What are they putting on their faces or in their rectums? What are they doing to maintain this level of youthfulness?
Yeah, they're making the rest of us look bad, that's for sure.
Do we need to get Dr. Drew back?
I think we do. Something's going on. And, of course, congratulations to Yingling Brewery once again.
Sure.
I don't know if I'd mentioned this or not.
But you haven't mentioned it.
They have been named by the National Brewers Association as the best-selling craft beer in the United States. Pottstown? Pottsville, rather?
towns in different places in Pennsylvania. But Pottsville, PA, is the home of the Yingling Brewery.
Sure. I dated one of the Yinglings in college.
Was it Ming?
First of all, Yingling's a German name, okay?
No, it's not.
It's not an Asian
name.
It's
a panda name. That's what it is.
I dated someone from the Yingling family. She was part of the brewery. She was a brewery heiress.
No.
How did I let her get away?
Nobody cares.
That's what I'm thinking, right? Isn't that what you're thinking right now, Kevin?
No, I'm thinking, is Ralph still talking?
You son of a bitch. Luda! Luda, get back in here!
He's gone.
Luda!
He's gone.
Luda, they're not interested in me!
He's gone.
I'm Ralph Garman, I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you, Ralph.
Stop it! God damn you, Bean!
Oh, it's got to be by
you
now.
You did
come
it
on.
Every day since Tuesday.
Four,
it messes us up.
It has to be Friday by
it's
now.
Not.
Tomorrow's Friday.
How is
tomorrow.
It not Friday?
Tomorrow
how is it stop playing it.
Luda!
Right. You're a bad man. Tomorrow's Friday, which means we have the movie beat. We also have RJ Bell to tell us how to make money on the games that are happening this weekend that involve a round ball that we're not allowed to mention. And we also have Gabriel Iglesias in studio. And
we have gay Gabriel Iglesias? Yeah,
did I say
you're different from straight Gabriel Iglesias?
Oh, I didn't realize I stuttered that. Gabriel Iglesias will be in the studio, and he's going to help us call the opening act winner.
Ooh.
Tomorrow morning on All New Kevin and Beach.